Blog Talk Radio.
Way back in Jersey, the only thing you really free to do is serve. When you fight for your rights and you stand, watch out for the man, pouring drugs in your land, guns in your hand. Yes, Mando, COINTELPRO. Don't he open any letters, hit this with the COINTELPRO. Whips and chains, whips and chains. Sitting around waiting for the shit to change. You point fingers, not at this bitch complain. Started didn't fight, just a strip to blame. Kids getting off for murder, nobody pushing it further. Bunch of lost sheep out here looking for a herder. Killed off our leaders, what the fuck you expect? Violence to be the only thing you respect. I watch news clips today. America had always got some shit to say. Terror breeds terror. They just drop bombs. Some mothers and their kids, yeah, just today. But shit, I don't wanna talk right now. Took another bullet to my heart right now. So Bobby cut my neck so they wouldn't shoot their weapons. Seen his mama get the news, yeah, it's all right now. Now whips and chains, whips and chains. The American way, playing whips and chains. Kill Martin, but you'll never get a soda. Kill Malcolm, but you'll never get a soda. Whips and chains. The American way, slaves, whips and chains. Kill Bobby, but you'll never get a sodder. Kill Fred, but you'll never get a sodder. Crips and blood, Crips and thugs. Somebody kill their brother, nigga, just because you created these conditions. Racism, segregation in LA. Fed kids on the schools with the hate. Chase the Panthers out the states. Whoa, one go inside a
coming in a cell. Broke out of jail. Now you wanna spread propaganda, but we woke up. No more for you to sell. Devils go to hell. Fred Hampton in the inner city, building unity with gangs. They working with him. CIA agent. Everything they could to flood the hoods with heroin. At the same time, snatch away our heroines. But I don't wanna talk right now. Took another bullet to my heart right now. Drug Fred fell asleep inside his bed. Then he shot him dead. Bottle in a sack. Yeah, it's all right now. Now whips and chains. Whips and chains. The American way. Plays whips and chains. Kill Bobby, but she'll never get a stutter. Kill Fred, but she'll never get a stutter. Whips and chains. Whips and chains. The American way. Plays whips and chains. Kill Sophie, but she'll never get a stutter. Kill Huey, but she'll never get a stutter. Kill King. Kill X. Kill Fred.
She escaped. You put a bounty on her head.
Poison water in the air and the food.
We already dead, so what else we got to lose?
Once we realize the power that we have as a people and put our minds together, we unite to defeat you. Question lies they teach you. Don't conform to authority, cause under uniforms, human bonds I bleed to. No justice, no peace, what the people say. The indigo's finna go rise and lead the way. 154 got, but where's that for Trayvon, Grant Rice, Mike Brown, and Freddie Gray? I don't wanna talk right now. Took another bullet to my heart right now. Everybody know, now they wanna sign and touch us
about
the revolution, yeah, it's about to start right now.
I have advocated, and I still advocate, revolutionary changes in the structure and in the principles that govern the United States. I advocate self-determination for my people and for all oppressed people inside the United States. I advocate an end to capitalist exploitation, the abolition of racist policies, the eradication of sexism, and the elimination of political repression. If that is a crime, then I am totally guilty.
Whips and chains, whips and chains, the American way, slaves, whips and chains. Kill Martin, but you'll never get a stutter. Kill Malcolm, but you'll never get a stutter. Whips and chains, the American way, slaves, whips and chains. Kill Fred, but you'll never get a stutter. Kill Huey, but you'll never get a stutter.
welcome each and every one of you to Black Power Radio. And we have yet another episode in the beautiful city of Washington, D.C., a potential fair city. Nevertheless, injustice is flirting throughout the nation from the city of Washington, D.C. I am your co-host tonight, the Sheikh Al Imam Akbar Abdullah Kareem, and we are here to give you yet an episode that reaches into the hearts and to the minds of Asada Shakur, alluded to the fact of capitalistic exploitation and injustice. And injustice anywhere is, again, an injustice done everywhere. The Almighty God has given us this blessing of Black Power Radio to relieve you of the yokes that bind our people, that bind up the people. There are many roads to freedom. The new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense decided to go in the road with the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, a freedom fighter in his own right, nevertheless a historian, a scholar, and in general, a stomp-down revolutionary for Black freedom and Black justice and for divine power from God. And that's what they have given to the ancestors to free us at this hour. He had a cub by the name of the Honorable Hashim Akhenaten Nzinga, who fought for freedom and used the community faith-based initiatives to start a fire in America among the Black revolutionaries. A fire for freedom, a fire for justice. And we are lighting the trail today for freedom and justice, as we were taught by both of our mentors, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad and the Honorable Hashim Akhenaten Nzinga. We're blessed today and blessed tonight to have our beloved sister and doctor, Mellow Desires, on that west side. And I know she's anxious to give it to you tonight in a way that's never been done before. We have a guest. Our beloved brother will come at the bottom of the hour. Our beloved brother, R.W. Akile. And we hope that we will give him much of our attention, not necessarily your undivided attention, but by him being a fired up Pan-Africanist, a Black Pan-Africanist. And when we say these things, it's not to exploit the word Black, but we distinguish a Black African because, oh my, there are so many Africans that are not Black physically, intellectually, spiritually, culturally, on any wise African related to our struggle for Africa. And if it's a Black Pan-Africanist as opposed to any other type of Pan-Africanist. So we distinguish Black to know that specifically they are talking about us, and we are relating to enslavement of the African people. This is our relationship with the world. I hope that you will pay close attention to Dr. Desire tonight, and she has much to give you in the way of these trials that are going on from the Rittenhouse to Ahmaud Arbery, and from O.J. Simpson on Black to Emmett Till. I have barely gotten over Emmett Till, to be honest, from Trayvon Martin to Stephon in California, Florida to Georgia, Georgia to Mississippi, from Seattle, Washington, Black to Boston, Massachusetts, from Boston to Houston, Houston to Chicago, Atlanta, all the way to Oakland. It's the same story of Black people being exploited, Black people being executed, and no one is coming to the due process, or should we say the very long overdue process. But with some of that said tonight, we want to welcome to the airways our beloved host, the Honorable Dr. Mellow Desire. Assalamu alaikum and Black Power.
Black power, family, black power. Whew, we made it through another week. Thank you so much for joining us this week on Black Power Radio. We have a lot to unpack with you today. The primary topic today is the right of self-defense. This has been the topic since the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict. But is it fair in all sense? We shall explore. So come and join with me today on Black Power Radio, the JDAF Spin.
Hop on in, bunnies, the JDAF Spin, where we discuss urban issues pressing America. Data, action, facts, truths, with a little bit of justice wrapped in a warm, fuzzy glow. And I'm your host, TJ Fat, the bunny with the gas mask. And I have my mask on extra tight today because injustice stinks to high heaven, my friends. What's going on, America? The JDAF Spin.
All right, so Kyle Rittenhouse, as we have taken, had a very surprising verdict. And just this past Thursday, we also were looking at Julius Jones. Remember, he was on death row for nearly 22 years. And Jay Kite, the governor, instead of executing him, gave him life without the possibility of parole. So was that fair justice, black family? Hardly think so. So let's look at the case of Kyle Rittenhouse and how his verdict actually changed the scope on how we really look at self-defense. Now, self-defense, the actual definition, is the right to defend yourself in reasonable force. So that means if you happen to take somebody else's life by reasonable force, right to self-defense will get you off. But does it really affect all Americans? That we have yet to be seen. So let's take a look at the case of Kyle Rittenhouse, how he was acquitted, and how his judge, Bruce Schroeder, following the story, black family, I mean, it was hard looking at this judge. It's just say he's one can short of a six-pack, to put it nicely. A longtime Wisconsin judge, 50 years, mind you, that was chosen on one of the most controversial cases, a young vigilante, so to speak, that crossed over state lines with an AK-47. What happened in this case? Let's find out.
The defendant will rise to face the jury and hearken to its verdict.
State of Wisconsin versus Kyle Rittenhouse. The first comment of the information, Joseph Rosenbaum. The jury find the defendant Kyle H. Rittenhouse not guilty. As to the second count of the information, Richard McGinnis, we the jury find the defendant Kyle H. Rittenhouse not guilty. As to the third count of the information, unknown male, we the jury find the defendant Kyle H. Rittenhouse not guilty. As to the fourth count of the information, Anthony Huber, we the jury find the defendant Kyle H. Rittenhouse not guilty. As to the fifth count of the information, Gage Grosskreutz, we the jury find the defendant, Kyle H. Rittenhouse, not guilty.
And there you have it. There you have it, black family. He passed out because I'm sure he was even shocked how his privilege got him off.
These are your unanimous verdicts. Is there anyone who does not agree with the verdict as read? We the jury poll. Okay, folks, your job is done, and we started just about 3 weeks ago.
Now, black family, I want you to listen to the tone of 75-year-old Bruce Schroeder and how, well, you just listen, and we'll determine how his tone was.
And I told you it would last 2 weeks and 2 days. This is 3 weeks. You were a wonderful jury to work with. You were punctual. You were attentive. And forgot six over here who had a very difficult job of keeping from discussing the case during the time that they were sequestered as well. All of you, I couldn't have asked for a better jury to work with.
Just listen to the accolades. A young man was just let off for killing two people. Forget the circumstance. Imagine if that person was black. Would we even reach to a verdict like this?
And it has truly been my pleasure. I think without commenting on your verdict, the verdicts themselves, just in terms of your the attentiveness and the cooperation that you gave to us, justifies the confidence.
He might as well give each juror a bouquet of roses, the accolades that he's pouring on them, which, mind you, majority all-white jury.
But the founders of our country placed it. So I dismiss you at this time. You're never under any obligation to discuss any aspect of this case with anyone. You're welcome to do so as little or as much as you want. The media have requested, a number of media sources have requested the ability to talk to you, and they have been allowed to present presentations to you that you'll get in writing.
Bumbling idiot. That's what he sounds like. This is a judge, black family. For 50 years, this man has been operating in just the speech. At this time, I know it's radio, but at this time, they're actually giving Kyle Rittenhouse a bottle of water. Again, significant. What is a bottle of water for a murderer? What is food for a man who killed 9 black people in the church, right? How they coddle and treat these mass killers, these young white baby-faced killers. I would like a bottle of water at this point.
And it's entirely up to you whether you want to contact them. They are not to contact you. If anyone does contact you and just you tell them you're not interested in discussing it, if that's the case. And if anyone persists in doing so, report that to us and it will be addressed, I assure you. At the beginning of the trial, that is, your concerns are addressed and respected.
I can't. Yeah, I counted at least 16 ums in just this sentence. But this is the judge that allowed this young man to go free.
Thank you so much. And you're after 4 years, you're eligible for service again. It would be my pleasure to work with you.
My pleasure to work with you again as you let a cold-blooded murderer walk out the door. Now, I must tell you, black family, when this case first came out, I was a little bit surprised at the comment section at the live hearing, which, you know, played on various outlets. But when you look at the comment section when Kyle was first and he gave that tearful acting and snot nose and the way he was describing how Rosenbaum was coming and attacking him. That look that he gave, priceless. I looked at the comment section, and I noticed a lot of people were saying, Black Lives Matter, let Kyle go. He's a hero. He's a vigilante. He was defending Jacob Blake. That was the comment section now. But now you think? When the judge actually gave him free change to do such murders, there's an outrage? Black family, can we make it make sense? And I'm sure this is not white folks that was cheering Black Lives Matter for Kyle Rittenhouse at the time. That, for me, was appalling to see. Because no matter what the deal is, as Kyle Rittenhouse gets let go free for a mere all races, especially black people, who have been time and time again through this system, have been charged for 20, 30, 40, 50 life sentences, as we will look in later on, for crimes they did not commit. Now, it's no doubt, Black family, that Kyle Rittenhouse did this crime, or else he wouldn't be on trial. That's not the question. It's the result, as we all see, the double standard that the American justice system still has for its very own.
Kenosha community now moving forward after the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. The trial ended Friday when the jury announced a not guilty verdict. Cassie Williams has more on what happened and what's next. After the sounds of flames in August 2020, and 3 weeks of screaming outside the courthouse this November, Jason Becker is enjoying the quiet of the Kenosha lakefront.
They actually are interviewing Kenosha residents, and I want you to listen carefully, Black family, as to how they described the media attention that this little town received.
Kenosha's a great city, it's a great town, and there's a lot to offer.
There's only a few national media outlets left. Civic Park clearing out after what felt like a year and a half in the national spotlight.
It's kind of overwhelming, actually, because people aren't used to this notoriety.
The Rittenhouse trial lasting longer than anticipated. One day to select the jury, 8 days of at times heat.
You hear that, Black family? I want you to hear that one more time. How long did it take to pick up the jury?
One day to select the jury, 8 days of at times heated testimony and debate.
That's basic law. It's been basic law in this country for 40 years, 50 years. I have no idea why you would do something like that.
Including Rittenhouse himself taking the stand.
He is the Academy Award performance.
Then one day to finalize jury instructions and argue about evidence. A day for closing argument, and then 3.5 days of deliberation before
not guilty.
After some demonstrations and one arrest Friday night, Saturday in Kenosha was quiet. Becker hoping the city learns from what happened and becomes better for it.
Well, I'm hoping that nothing happens forward and we can just build Kenosha together as a funding family, actually.
Right. Let's build Kenosha together as one big happy family. Kenosha, whose name I'm not going to mention, caused this strife of how white supremacy allowed its own to walk away. Now, the tables are going to turn, Black family, as to how this result, this verdict, basically a slap on the wrist, how does it leave America and the way that it views its gun laws? Now, we're going to take a look at the history of who we were, Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. This is where we actually took on, because self-defense in this same circumstance that allowed Kyle Rittenhouse to walk away free is the same one that we as Black people in America still have to struggle for.
Nick Bezel served in the military and resettled in Texas. He founded the Elmer Geronimo Pratt Gun Club to help advocate for Black Americans exercising their Second Amendment rights. The Gun Club is named after a high-ranking member of the Black Panther Party during the 1960s and 70s.
I grew up in the Chicagoland area, so I've seen a lot of violence. But I also saw people who were law-abiding citizens didn't really have the means to defend themselves because of the laws. I'm talking about a Democrat area, a stronghold. They passed gun laws and prevent law-abiding citizens from owning firearms. And I knew that wasn't right.
Now, how many of us Black family have family members right now that are incarcerated based on a gun charge of any kind, whether it's they feel illegal possession, whether they feel that there was part of a so-called murder that they didn't really investigate? How many of our family members have been affected? How Black, innocent, law-abiding citizens been affected by simply defending themselves? Philando Castile, shall we forget a young man who was shot in cold blood because he was driving while Black? Ahmaud Arbery, as we already know, he was still breathing when the police from Scintilla Shores arrived, and they allowed this black king to die while they coddled the father and son, Gregory and Travis.
The Texas state legislature passed over a dozen bills in 2021 that expanded gun rights, including one permitless carry bill that allows most individuals 21 or older to purchase and carry arms without training or a permit.
Hey, how you been? All right, how you been doing?
I'm good, good.
So this isn't just like your typical gym workout. This is the real purpose.
Yeah, this is the purpose behind it. This is to actually simulate wearing all my gear. So when I actually have to put it on and use it, it's almost like second nature. I want it to be as light as possible so it's not affecting me moving or even noticing that I have this extra weight on.
Yeah. And you have to think about wearing this vest versus wearing some of your tactical gear because you don't want to cause alarm.
I'm 6'3", 235 pounds. I mean, I'm already a big guy to start. And then when you start having all this gear on, if I'm out here with an open carry with a rifle, it's going to cause panic. And the only thing people are going to say is, you know what the description is going to be. There's a black guy in the park with a tactical gear on. We don't know what he's doing.
And that black family, let me repeat that, is the reason why many innocent black men and women are gunned down. Because the opponent, the oppressor, felt threatened. I feared for my safety. Right? Ahmaud Arbery. I feel uncomfortable. So even though you're defending yourself or not doing anything, the description of who you are will automatically alarm and shoot to kill.
Tactical gear on. We don't know what he's doing. There'll be helicopters in the sky. SWAT team will pull up, weapons drawn, not knowing that I'm a law-abiding citizen.
So are you carrying now? Among the fastest-growing cities in the country. But fast-paced development brought rapid gentrification that's hit black communities especially hard. According to the city of Austin, African Americans comprised nearly 17% of the city's population in 1940. In 2020, they made up less than 7%.
Now, we're at East Austin, so all our Texas Panther family, if you're out there, let us know. How are the treatments for open carry in blacks in the state of Texas? Do you feel safer? Are you still harassed? We'd like to hear from you. So if you also like to call in, 646-478-4447, press 1 to get in the queue. All right, we definitely want to hear from the public on the hypocrisy of self-defense.
And numbers are expected to continue to fall.
So this area, this is East Austin, a historically black area of Austin. You know, historically embedded into the community, this is where they all grew up at, they all hung out at this park down here. As this area continues to be gentrified, there have been calls for them to close the park down and then reopen the park as a dog park. And so that just further shows how gentrification leads to displacement.
If you're just joining in, we're listening to an interview of Nick Bezel. He's the founder of Elmo Geronimo Pratt Pistol and Rifle Gun Club in Texas.
The black community from their historic neighborhoods.
According to the local nonprofit Ending Community Homelessness Coalition, African Americans represent 40% of Austin's homeless population.
So we come out here every Sunday and try to give back to the community. So this is a weekly event for us.
All right.
We find it beneficial and rewarding to come out here and try to help people as much as we can, whether it's feeding them, whether it's trying to find them housing. Just because we're a gun club doesn't mean we're all about guns. We also have to give back to our community.
You see that, black family? Law-abiding citizens that are protecting themselves and serve the community. Did Cal Rittenhouse, was he serving the homeless at the time of his capture? Was he giving back to his community at the time he was vigilante justice? Was Kyle Rittenhouse a community member that was doing good and serving and helping others? Didn't matter.
whether it's trying to find them housing. Just because we're a gun club doesn't mean we're all about guns. We also have to give back to our community. As I was pulling up this morning, I heard a lot of commotion. I started seeing a bunch of police cars, about 7 to 8 police cars out here. I went live on Facebook to try to capture the interaction. And I noticed they had an elderly black man up against the vehicle. They had all their weapons drawn, lethal and non-lethal weapons. You could clearly hear a lot of people saying, you were lucky that you didn't get shot.
And that's the scene, Black family, that we have in our neighborhood, especially where I live. That's a daily occurrence. Just last week, a young black kid, don't look no older than 18, same age as Kyle Rittenhouse, was handcuffed against a police car, and yet the officers at that moment couldn't tell us why. Even his sister that came to see him tell us why this young black man was in handcuffs. So eventually they had to leave. But imagine if there was no witnesses. This is the daily struggle that we go through every day, and we have to constantly remind America that we are still due for reparations.
And I just think that's the climate that we're in America, that any time that you live through a police interaction, that's a good day.
You feel as though being armed at all times offers you a degree of protection, right? Given what we've seen with policing in America, the simple fact that you are armed, right, that raises the temperature significantly. Doesn't that put you at greater risk of clashing with the police?
Now, the person that you're hearing right now is a non-black person that's interviewing Nick Bezos. And I like the way the journalists like to narrate how they want to perceive us before anything happens, how the awareness level is raised. You see, these are trigger words for the opposition, for them to actually use their force and get away with it. But yet, when we do the same, it is 30, 40, 50 lifetime prison sentences.
Who may ultimately decide you're a threat and we need to take action right now.
Right. Well, first and foremost, everybody's entitled to self-preservation. I don't care who it is. And I don't advocate violence, but I do advocate self-defense.
And there you have it. Nick Bezos just named exactly what we stand for. We do not advocate for violence. Absolutely not. It is the opposite, or else the free food program wouldn't have started, or else our schools would have been improved. Our communities wouldn't have been much better when the Panther Party started. So when people want to portray us in a negative light is because their ignorance and their generational privileges has caused them to think this way. This is why we cannot assimilate with someone who cannot recognize us as equal human beings. Time and time and time again, we have seen the injustices, but we keep marching in the street. We keep asking for justice. No, no more. We cannot waste another breath, another foot, another hand raise. We've got to apply it through legislation. We've got to apply it through writing ourselves, creating our own laws. This is why we always advocate know the law in your state. That's the only way we can change it or create our own government.
Advocate self-defense. And we keep talking about what's the purpose of firearms is to even the playing field. When do we close the racial wealth gap so we can even the playing field? They won't allow, this is slow genocide is what we're living through. They gentrify areas, they displace us. We're refugees in our own country, and they refuse to do anything to fix it.
That deserves an encore.
Refugees in our own country, and they refuse to do anything to fix it.
The Elmer Geronimo Pratt Gun Club is involved in political issues beyond the Second Amendment and gun trading. The gun club members say they're frustrated because they feel the Biden administration hasn't done enough to move black interests forward.
Back when you needed the black vote to push you over the top so you could beat Trump, show me where that worked for us and tell us what we got for that. All of these agendas are being met. Where is the black agenda? Why is it not being met? And why was it not being met first?
I think, again, this last election cycle, I think you found a lot of people who traditionally voted Democrat did the same thing I did, and they withheld their vote for multiple reasons. As long as we're giving our vote away for free, I don't see them ever correcting course and doing something tangible for us.
And that black family is part of the action plan that we had discussed before. Don't involve yourself in the election process. It means absolutely nothing to blacks, absolutely nothing. Every time we keep pandering to these politicians as we see utilize and eat well, raise their family in good schools, separate yourselves, yet they're supposed to represent you. If we had the proper political leadership, do you think we'll actually have poverty, low-income neighborhoods? No. Our taxes would even the playing level field, as Nick Bazell so brilliantly explained.
Traditionally voted Democrat, did the same thing I did, and they withheld their vote for multiple reasons. As long as we're giving our vote away for free, I don't see them ever correcting course and doing something tangible for us.
You've been taken for granted.
Of course. Of course. Everybody's abused us for over 400 years.
Well, the Mulford Act, a bill prohibiting the public carry of loaded firearms in California.
Now, this was something that Ronald Reagan, at the time he was governor, had put in.
Was signed into law by Governor Ronald Reagan in 1967. Legally armed members of the Black Panthers protested an earlier version of the bill at the California Assembly in May of that year, making national news. In contrast to the NRA's opposition to gun control today, the NRA backed gun control laws in the 60s.
You know, you look at Philando Castile, who was a gun owner in Minnesota. He had a gun permit, a valid gun permit. He had a valid firearm in his car. So where was the NRA then? Where was the NRA in the 60s when the Panthers were exercising their right?
Now, they're talking about, again, it's called the Mulford Act. The Mulford Act. And this actually strengthened gun control laws, which really didn't do much, but just penalized blacks who possessed.
And then, where was the NRA in the 60s when the Panthers were exercising their right? So, again, why do we need black gun organizations? It's because nobody else will help us. Nobody else will stand with us. If they're killing people now and we have guns, imagine what would happen if we didn't have them. Our only means is to protect ourselves with firearms, because if we don't, we're already going through a slow genocide.
Well, we're going to take a pause there because we actually have about 5 more minutes into this interview before we go into our real story of one perfect example of a Panther who currently in the same situation that Kyle Rittenhouse has, but yet is still in jail. Imam, so I want to go to if there's any callers that might want to chime in. If they have any opinions concerning the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict, which I'm sure there's plenty out there, but what do we say to you? How do we move on with this type of obvious discrimination in self-defense?
Yes, seen, especially you can look throughout the state of Texas, California, Oklahoma, Georgia, to highlight some of those cases would do us a great benefit, include Pennsylvania and Virginia. And we move on these things and see that they have rarely let the black man off the hook. Anything related to a killing, he's likely to be sentenced to at least some jail time. But on that strength, there are no white men that I have found in all of my stats and research, a white man doing time for taking the life of a black man. But yet many black men have died to the hand of a white man. So we should examine our system of injustice that has been managed by criminals, so they reverse the polarity on your thinking and say criminal justice system. So as we reverse the polarity on our thinking, and we're thinking rightly or speaking forthrightly and thinking right, we say a system of injustice run by criminals. And the evidence is everywhere you go and damn near everywhere you can look, especially throughout North America. And all of the 196,940,000 square miles of the planet Earth, we'll see that injustice done by Europeans throughout all the European nations. And they are moving on a white globalization. Anything that they can do to run amok for a black man and leave the black man holding the bag, set him up, do the cover-up, and then it comes to the jail time, they do the mother. So on all of this put together, again, arrives at a injustice that has been done by hardened criminals, who are the criminals sentenced to be in the so-called New World. And we'll leave that there and go to caller 504-435. We're at 504. Look at us. New Orleans area code of 504-435. You're actually live right here on Black Power Radio. Thank you for calling.
Well, yes, sir. I'm just listening, taking it all in. I generally have a lot of strong opinions. I really want to find out what you're about and what you're really addressing at now. So I kind of hold back to seek more information on what you're about, you know, and hopefully I can come back and offer some very insight. This is my first time.
Oh, welcome. We love first-time callers.
Yay, okay, we got our sound effects going. We're going to get our bell ringer, our trumpet to blow for our first-time callers. And you ring somebody, ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling, and somebody cut them a blog. Go through the verdict and find out which one we will use.
So where are you calling from, first-time caller?
Welcome.
From New Orleans.
New Orleans. Okay, so what is your take on the Kyle Rittenhouse case? That's what we're talking about. Self-defense. Does it have a double standard?
Well, I had predicted that he would walk and get off. Just the way he was acting, like he wasn't acting like someone under the stress of a murder trial. He was acting like he already knew the foregone conclusion. And he was put on, you know, he put on an act on the stage. He put on an act at the end, which was almost a reenacting of the, I hate bringing this up, but of the reaction that OJ had. And it seems like he copied that, and which was fake. The whole thing was fake. So it was predictable that he was going to be found innocent just by the way they were acting. And he was smiling. He was trying to catch himself, but he was smiling at different points. He wasn't acting like someone that was on trial for murder. So it was a foregone conclusion. And then the way the judge knew, I mean, the judge treated him like he was his son, you know.
Yes, notice that. So, that was a big notice. The comfortability that the judge had, he was more like a grandson because, you know, Bruce Schroeder is 75 and Kyle is 18. So that would be grandson status. Absolutely.
And then I read where at one point this judge's phone rang and it was almost like Donald Trump's theme song was his ringtone. So that guy was a total disaster for justice, a total absolute disaster. Yeah.
I agree. You couldn't have said it better. So this is why we have to, you know, create our own laws. And this is possible if we continue to be under this guise of one rule for another race and the other lock up and or death for another, how much longer do we take it? Should we take action?
Well, you know, being on the earth for some time, I would say that, you know, as our brother Malcolm said, you know, our study of history is very rewarding. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, you know. We actually made that decision in 1968, you know, to form our own government. And that was done at a government conference that resulted in the founding of the Republic of New Africa and the provisional government of the Republic of New Africa. So we've been here before. We have experience, and we have these things that we have done. You know, we looked at it and made that decision then. And one of the principal people that was critical in that process, of course, was Amari Bubakari Obadiah I. And he was the second president of the PGRNA. But one of the things I learned from him, and one of the things he said, is that the proper context of this thing is that this is a war being waged on black people. We call it the secret war. And he gave the best analogy I've ever heard. And that was, he said it was like two men walking down the street. And they're just walking down the street, and all of a sudden, one man began to punch the other one and just punch the other one and punch the other one and punch the other while all along proclaiming that we are not fighting. That's the secret war on black people. So the context is that you have one nation warred against another nation. That's the context we need to put it in. This government is not our government. It's never been our government. Will never be our government. You know, that's where we are right now. So we have to look at it in that context. You know, that's what I'll say, and I kind of leave it there, you know, because I can dominate a conversation. I don't want to do that.
No, well, we welcome it. Thank you so much, Queen. I appreciate your call and your advice is very telling. We need to have more conversations to the table. How do we create our new government? And you have solidified why we definitely need to, but the next step is to do it. And thank you again so much for your call. We love our first-time callers again, all the way from New Orleans. Thank you.
We'll get some sound effects. But I have one question for the brother out of New Orleans.
Yes, sir.
Now, you saw this backdrop. Is there any way to connect the dots to the current big case going on with Ahmaud Arbery being executed by three white men? Is anything going on in the backdrop to set any precedents that would let these defendants off the hook down in Brunswick, Georgia, if you're following up?
Yeah, I have definitely been following that. I think we have a better chance of getting a conviction in those cases. I mean, that was just running down and cold-blooded murder. That's what that was. Even though these white juries, they only need to give them a little bit of a handle that they can squeak out of it, and that's what they'll do. So that's where the doubt is right there. But that was just related, you know. I think all these cases are connected. And one guy said online that, you know, he was just one of millions of them. So they're connected by supremacy and specific organizations. The brother with NFAC, when he did his investigation, one of the things he said was that a woman came out and talked to them and said that all of them were members of the Ku Klux Klan. So, you know, that's what I see in the background of all of this. And that organization, as well as these new clans that's popped up, like the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers and all the rest of them.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And then the defendant being on the stand said he had no real reason to even approach, according to when the attorney was questioning him about how could he relate this man to want to pull him in for questioning or make some form of a citizen's arrest. So the defendant himself dismissed any possibility of it being a real citizen's arrest. So we'll look at this thing and examine it over the next few days and hope you could come back next week. Or we are also on Mondays. We're on Sunday and Monday, and maybe bring a friend to Black Power Radio. We're working on the freedom and justice thing strongly, but there are many, many other benefits to listening, tuning in with our vast and participating audience here at Black Power Radio. So we just want to thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
And Black Power to we the people.
It may be late, but we do have our first caller sound effect here.
We got one going. All right.
Okay.
So we got to keep it. If we can reproduce that sound at every first time caller, we're rolling down here to a 301 area code. We're out here at 301. 301-682. You're actually live right here on Black Power Radio with your host, Dr. Mello Desire. She's, of course, in Los Angeles, and we're going over all of this Rittenhouse, Ahmaud Arbery, and any other injustice that's been done across
Black
the shores. Black Power,
Black Power.
Welcome. From the hells and the smells of North America, here we go again. They want to give it to us again, it seems like. They give it to us in twos all the time, twos and threes. Here we go again. Anyway, so I wanted to just say Black Power to the listening audience, everybody, that if it had been a black teenager, had it been one of my sons, he'd been dead from walking around carrying the rifle. And no matter how a person look at it, whether they think he's innocent or think he's guilty, when he's on the radio, if they say guilty or they say innocent, then it don't matter. But the guilt is in the fact that if it had been you or I walking down the street in a protest with a AK-47, we've been locked up on site. And by his age, they should have at least stopped him and said, why are you carrying that at such a young age? And they told, like, and they told the police to stand down. Let me finish. Anyway, I was saying that, sorry about that. if it had been with followers, they'd have been dead from carrying it, first of all. And number two, not only that, where they had been dead. Say, if I had to say, okay, I shot them guys out of self-defense. Say, hey, I was getting all kind of stuff coming at me. I feared for my life. I turned and started shooting. Say, okay, we'll let you off on the shooting part, but walking around with the rifle, your ass is going to jail for that, at least. You know?
Yeah, that's the double standard. Actually, I'm glad you mentioned that.
The double standard.
Yeah, so that's what we're going to look at with another case, Imam.
And I was thinking about a scripture. Dr. Desire, I was thinking about a scripture as well where Christ went to pray that he take that cup up out of his hand. He said, because he didn't want to drink from it. He said, well, Father, if I got to drink from this cup, so be it. But I prefer not.
Okay.
If you want to take this cup up out my hand, so then he come back, and the disciples are asleep, and he's like, all I asked you to do was hold the line for an hour, at least an hour. That's all I asked you to do. Let that play while I'm finishing. Of holding the line. You feel me? Just hold the line for an hour. Don't go to sleep. Don't nod off. Because if you nod off, the enemy going to slip up in here. And so stay woke is the message. That's the message. Stay woke. Hold the line. And when you're holding the line, stay woke. When Jesus said watch and pray, watch and pray don't mean sit idly by and watch them come in. If I'm watching and I'm praying, God will say, look to the left. And I'm like, here they come. Lock and load, baby. You know? And if it was...
Yeah, so we don't promote violence.
I say this from the heart, but it's not anything no call for action or nothing. But if this was done in the court of the public, if we the people was charging these no good, he was bred for it though. See, and I don't want to get off the subject of Kyle Rittenhouse because he was bred for it. A little Ku Klux Klan outfits and stuff when he was little, his little AKs and his little statement about, well, I can't wait to shoot somebody. So he was there for it. And then they called him a kid when he was having the trial. And then after that trial, they say, Mr. Rittenhouse. You know why? Because they wanted him to be the face of white America. Well, not just white America, not white America. Let's take that off of the good white folks that's trying to be out there with us as we the people. Let's talk about the ones that want to be on that racist tip. The ones like the Proud Boys and the damn Ku Klux Klan, all these Dixie clans, as they say. So he was bred for it. So now they want him to be the face of the union, of the new union. That's what that's all about. So I'm just saying, right. My people, stay woke. Hold the line. Stay woke. As Jesus said, watch and pray. Because if you watching, they can't sneak up on me. As long as y'all watching, but when he came out of there and they were asleep, he probably whipped their asses. He probably came out like Khalid Mohammed and said, look, y'all can't stay woke an hour. Hold the line, my people. Hold the line. Black power. And one other thing, don't forget, the revolution got to be fed. The revolution got to have gas money to get there. And we ain't far, but we got to get there by any means necessary. And they're not going to give it to us. We have to get it from our people. So, again, I say send money and get your pencil ready, $77Bakers, so we can keep the locomotive of the black power structure going strong. And don't forget, stay the boom shakalaka cracker woke. Black power?
Black power.
Black power.
Black power.
And
a strong black military that black the color like our general beloved Chairman Sheikh Imam Akbar always say. Black power.
Black power.
Black power.
Thank you, Black Lightning, for giving your contribution tonight and being excited and firing up our vast listening audience. And we know that we love him so much, and he's consistent in being on Black Power Radio. But I think I have at least one of our guests that's out there, and we're going to take a look at the 323 as we open the line. And remember, go to $77Bakers, and this is from Dr. Mellow Desire. I think we're Brother R.W. Akile, if I hope I'm getting the name correct, is on the line with us at the 323 area code, 323-799. You're live on Black Power Radio. Assalamu alaikum.
Black power, black power, black power.
Black power,
I like
power.
That. Yes, how y'all doing this evening?
All right, black power.
I was listening to the brother throwing it down. We are at a dynamic crossroads. Right this moment, in fact. Here we are on our way in a few days to celebrate Thanksgiving. Some folks say Thanksgiving or whatever name that they want to give it. I want you to be in tune with the time in which we find ourselves. I want to expose it for what it really is. This is a war ritual. That's what I said, a war ritual. Thanksgiving. It came about out of a war in 732 A.D. when Charles Martel defeated the Moors at, I remember in my junior high school history book, I think it said Poitiers. In other texts, it says Tours, France. It's north of the Pyrenees Mountains, on where in that little tight corner of France, not far from the ocean. And the Muslim forces were coming across the Pyrenees to invade into the land of Gaul, the French. And Charles Martel, Charles the Hammer, H-A-M-M-E-R,
Charles the Hammer stopped them. I believe it was October 10th, 1732. This was considered to be a great, a fantastic, like a in football, a Hail Mary. Because had the Christian forces lost this battle, France would have become a Muslim, and everything else, all the way to Germany, it would all become Muslim. So in response to this, French bakers developed a bakery item known today as the croissant. That's what it was known as then, the crescent. It was, to me, a brilliant manner in which they were able to engage their people in a ritual of associative magic. That's exactly what it would be described as. They took this bakery item, made into a crescent, and the people ate it. And the symbolism is they're eating the power of the Muslim. They're taking the power of the Muslim. That's exactly what that was about. And they kept this going, and they distilled it further with the addition of the guinea hen. Guinea hen at that time was referring to a bird that's a little bit, I think it's a little bigger than a turkey, but the term guinea was like saying nigger. From the way the white folks say nigger, because I use nigger and I use it in an adoring sort of way. I don't use it in a derogatory sort of way, because I know that NGR was the name of the goose who laid the golden egg from ancient Egypt. Now,
Achille, what do you think we should be celebrating instead of Thanksgiving? Because there are definitely an alternative for us as black people, right?
Yes, there is an alternative. Before I get to that alternative, I'm gonna cover that. Just one moment. You see, at some point in the game, we feel, because that's what you hear everybody say, I'm giving thanks to God. I'm giving thanks for me being alive. I'm giving thanks for giving thanks. But because of the fact of the way it is, its own story on this side of the water is associated. Massacres, wars against the Native Americans. I mean, this is, it makes us feel uncomfortable. So we feel that we can redirect it. I'm going to make it, you know, this is me giving thanks to God. But I want you to understand one thing. Once you kick a ritual out, it's out there. And it's going to keep going until it is stopped. Or the people that it is directed to stop participating in it. Now, that's where you come in as to what can we do. I think his name was Robert Sims. Either Robert Sims or Richard Sims. But he was in 1972 in Philadelphia, where the brother started a day known as Umoja Karamu. Umoja Karamu. I ran into it in 1987 at Uhuru Shule in Washington, D.C. with Baba Zulu. And so I brought it to L.A. when I came back to L.A. that same year. And it was Ajuan Yamiche here in Los Angeles that from 1987 until the time that she passed, she did it every year from that time on until just a few years ago. But Umoja Karamu is based upon the needs of the black family, the needs of black people. It's based on five periods. One, black, and is represented by a food. It is black eyed peas representing the color black for our time in the motherland. right and the food is rice for our time in slavery. Green
right.
For the struggle for the future, and that is collard greens. Red, and it varies because in different places they have incorporated different things. Some people use strawberries, some people use cranberries, but red represents the blood and the struggle. And the yellow or gold is represented by the food, a yam or corn. Now, evidently, it has expanded now. I see where it has both yellow and gold, and that represents the future. And each period, we take a character from a given period, an ancestor, and we have them, and we recite what they stood for, or we recite what they did, or recite what they said. Then we go on to sometimes something during the time of slavery. Let's say that we would speak about what Frederick Douglass spoke about or talked about. Or we would go to the period of time for the post Civil War period, the Reconstruction period, and we would talk about some of the things that brothers did in resisting the KKK. And then we would talk in terms of when it comes down to the future, what can we do? And now talk in terms of that. And now, let me back up. Most of us, I think, I'm speaking to the choir when I say that most of us know what Umoja Karamu means. Umoja means unity, and Karamu means feast, so the unity feast. Now, it has not had the same amount of thrust put behind it as Kwanzaa has. In fact, a lot of people who celebrate Kwanzaa have no idea that Umoja Karamu even exists. But, and there's other holidays. In other words, these are not our only two holidays, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
This is a subject that we even need to discuss because there's a holiday that honors Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. There's actually two holidays that honor Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. One is Jinyameh. The other one that I'm familiar with is Olugbala Day. Olugbala corresponds to January 12th on the Kwanzaa calendar. It corresponds to January 12th, which is the birthday of Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. So he was a personal friend of mine. And I if there's anybody that I would say represented soldier, Khalid Abdul-Muhammad was that guy. And so just giving you this, holidays.
That's interesting. Can you elaborate a little bit more on Khalid Abdul-Muhammad and what was his significance to the Black Revolution?
Well, first of all, Khalid was a put up and shut up kind of guy. He was he was forceful. He was arrogant, but he wasn't arrogant in a way that made you dislike him. But I tell you one thing: he stood for the truth straight up. He would say that he would tell the truth no matter how biting it might be. That's right. I witnessed that. Here I am going to. I'm thinking somebody is cool. Khalid pulled me off to the side and said, "Hey, homeboy, ain't cool at all." And he proceeded to expose him. Yes, Khalid was constrained while in the Nation of Islam because he had to stick according to the party line, quote unquote. I think he may have made Minister Farrakhan a little uneasy at some times. They went through a period of split. Yes, they did. If folks are not aware of that, that is very true. Khalid was the last, he founded the last topographical research center, Black People's Library and Topographical Research Center. Many of you may have heard, I would like to think, that is, that you may have heard mention of the top, because that's what we refer to the Topographical Research Center as, the top. And we said that affectionately.
And where was that located?
In L.A., the top was first located on Broadway just south of 54th Street, across the street from what was then Temple No. 27. Then it moved over to 42nd and Hoover. And then from there, it moved over to, and that's the one that Khalid founded, it moved to 3925 South Crenshaw, which was essentially 39th and Crenshaw. And so that was in the 80s. That's right about the time that Minister Farrakhan made his first significant speech at a national convention. It was at the State of the Race Conference. I believe it was 1980, either 79 or 80. At Benjamin O. Davis Middle School, where he came out. And I say he came out, he came out and he said, I'm coming back. We're starting the Nation of Islam back up again. And Khalid was his right-hand man.
All right.
So, see, we had a temple. Go ahead.
Yeah, we do wanted you to hold that because we have a lot of questions at the end of the hour concerning that. Very important. But I wanted us to get back to the self-defense as well as the improprieties for law concerning blacks and whites in civil justice. So we're going to just take a break and go to musical break. And we want to thank you, Akil. Can you tell us a little bit about where you are before we go into that break so people can know who you are and where to find you if they need anything?
Oh, I'm on Facebook under R.W. Akil and Kwanzaa in Los Angeles. You can also post on the Hookup Man page. The Hookup Man page is a page where if you have something to give or sell, post it on the Hookup Man page. All this is on Facebook. The Black Student Union Carry the Tradition. That's another page that we have. I just recently, we're in a mourning state at this point in time for Dr. Arthur Joseph Graham. And he shut down his website. It was, I believe it was Studies Legacy Foundation. Some of you computer savvy people may be able to go into the cloud and find some of the information that was on the Black Studies Legacy Foundation website. But Arthur Joseph Graham holds the distinction of being the chombo, the vessel through whence the seven principles came. He started what was known as the Black Student Council in 1963 at Cal State San Diego. Later, it would morph into the Black Student Union in the Bay Area. But he recently just passed. Arthur Graham, he was quite a prolific playwright. He wrote several plays, I'll say that he wrote a play for children. One, it was called The Captain and His Ship. It was a play on Marcus Garvey. He wrote another play called The Nationals. The Nationals was a play that it was a play, he says, a movement, and it's in that play where he mentions for the first time that I know of the term Black Studies. A few other things that he coined in there as well. But that play was used as an organizing tool in the Bay Area, in the San Francisco Bay Area. A guy by the name of Huey P. Newton studied or worked out of the Nationals. This is a book, a play written by Arthur Graham. We do have access to being able to get that out to the public at this time. It's going to take a moment for us to adjust everything, but still we will be able to provide that, and I would hope shortly. We're in a state of development. I do the Kwanzaa Festival here in Los Angeles, California. I've been doing the Kwanzaa Gwari Day. The Gwari Day is a spiritual procession. I've been doing it now for 44 years. This is the 45th year coming up, December 26, 2021. 11 a.m., Adams and Crenshaw to Leimert Park. We will welcome the 56th year of the Kwanzaa era, the year of Imani. And those are some of the things that I've been doing.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Akile. And then we will, throughout the show, throughout the upcoming weeks, advertise the Kwanzaa Gwari Day event where we all will participate. So just in short, before we go to our musical segment, can you tell us exactly what is the name of the replacement for Thanksgiving for blacks here in America?
Umoja Karamu. Umoja Karamu. And I like Google. I think Google's the bomb. Google it and you'll find it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you,
can,
so much.
You can Wikipedia it. And you'll find it. It is common now. At one time, hardly anybody heard of it, but now you can hit it on Google and pull it up in 30 seconds.
That's
and get right.
right
off into it.
And Umoja Karamu, for those who may not know, means, as Dr. Akile, mentioned, is Unity Feast, right, in Swahili. And it's African-American celebration, which began in 1971 by Dr. Edward Sims, Jr.
Edward Sims, Jr. Thank you very much, my sister. Edward, you see, I gotta apologize. I should have known that. Edward Sims, Jr. I knew his name was Sims. But we need to get more into Umoja Karamu. We have to understand one thing, if I may. We have to understand one thing. The importance of these holidays is that they build the coup, the national soul, the collective soul. And it's the glue, if you will, that holds us together, the national soul, the coup. And holidays, songs, dances, those are important in the building of this, of the soul, of this national soul, of our national soul. It's important that we do these because, you see, for example, how many times have you been in a gathering where Lift Every Voice was sung and nobody really knew the words?
Mm-hmm.
Many of us have experienced that. But yet we can sing My Country, Tears of Thee and the national U.S. National Anthem. We need to also know, lift every voice and sing. That means we have to take time out. We have to stop being lazy. And we have to get down and study what is ours. It's embarrassing to come to a group of black youth or black people, period, and you have to say you have a lekes on. And nobody knows what they're even called. But yet you go into another setting and then be a bunch of other people different from us there. Oh, you got some elekes on and tell you what kind it is. That's embarrassing.
Right.
That means we have not studied about ourselves. And the brother.
That's what we hope to change. Yes, that's what we hope to change for our youth. So let's go into our drum circle, and then we're into a musical break. And then we'll come back. We have to finish off with Tulsa, Oklahoma. And then we're going to go dive deeply into a case of Imam Jamil al-Amin, also known as H. Rap Brown, and why his case is parallel to Kyle Rittenhouse. Thank you for joining Black Power Radio. We have our special guest, R.W. Akile, and with our host, Sheikh Iman Afar, Kareem Muhammad. To come back to that. Now, is there any closing remarks that you would like to say, Brother Akile, concerning what we need to do in this week of?
I can reflect as to what I'm doing. For example, I'm preparing for Kwanzaa at this time, and I'm I'm part of a present. In the big picture, this is a holiday preparation time. It means that we need to learn how to make our own kinaras, candle holders. Some of us need to know how to dip candles or cast candles. We need to learn the skills of celebrating our own holiday. In other words, we have to have some woodworkers. We have to have someone that knows how to cast candles. We have to know how to make the things that we need, not just go buy them. That's on the surface, but we have to get down to the organics of it, it being our culture. And the things that we need to have to celebrate our culture, we must be the ones that are providing it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're there in spirit, so to speak, part way, but we haven't taken it upon ourselves to actually and run with it. And note, y'all gotta know, you must know. Mm-hmm. Anytime anything black is being mentioned, you are the expert. You're the expert. That's how the world sees it.
Sure.
You're the ones that are out there that must define it, and you must keep it alive. That's why I want to. I'm here to teach you. I'm here to share with you, and I don't want to sound hoggish or arrogant. I just want to say that we need to know it.
That's right.
It's our responsibility. It ain't Joe Joe's responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I say that one more time.
Each one teach one.
That's right. Each one teach one. Oh, and the other thing, too, is that we have to strive for excellence.
That's right.
Yes, but in other words, if I'm gonna wish you well, I'm not wishing you halfway well. I wish you 1,000% well. That
mm-hmm.
means if I'm gonna do something, I have to do it well.
Because
mm-hmm. it represents
that's
trust.
Right. And that's the best advice. On that note, Brother Keeley, we thank you so much for joining us this segment. And we want to have you come back tomorrow where we discuss the mask of blackness and the significance of why we need to know what this play is all about.
You
is
got
there
it.
Any,
I'm ready.
Yes, sir. Is there any contact information you'd like to leave with the audience in case they want
yes.
to reach you, as you said?
You can message me at my Facebook page, R.W. Akile, A-K-I-L-E, or at the Kwanzaa in Los Angeles page, or the Black Student Union page, Black Student Union Carried the Tradition page, or
okay.
even, I have a number of different pages, please forgive me, there's Kwanzaa in Daba as well. They're on the internet. I'm also on Instagram under Kwanzaa Man. So my phone number, I don't mind giving you my phone number, 323-799-8409. That's 323-799-8409. My email, GWARIDE. Everybody knows how to spell Kwanzaa already, but Guaride is GWARIDE. Guaride, Kwanzaa Guaride at gmail.com. Let me repeat, Kwanzaa Guaride, GWARIDE at gmail.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Black Power. I want to take you now to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where we will revisit Black Wall Street and then go into the biography of one of our revered Panthers who still to this day, even after 20 years of innocence, is still incarcerated.
This year marked the 100-year anniversary of the Tulsa Race Massacre, when a white mob destroyed the prosperous black neighborhood of Greenwood, also known as Black Wall Street. Although some members of the black community were armed, between 75 and 300 Greenwood residents were brutally killed. The financial toll of the 19th massacre is estimated to amount over $200 million in property damage.
When we talk about reparations, we can't have that conversation without Tulsa, Oklahoma. We also can't talk about black self-defense without Tulsa, Oklahoma being mentioned.
Bezel, along with several other groups, organized an open carry march to commemorate the centennial of the Tulsa Massacre. Some groups that participated in the march have been criticized for extremist views. There are several pro-Second Amendment groups that have gathered here for what will be an armed march on the streets of Tulsa, which is not something you see every day. And they say that being armed is really the only way to prevent something horrific like that from happening again.
Murder. You see protesters go out, but when you have these protesters go out, they say, hands up, don't shoot, right? What you're telling the police is, I'm unarmed, the people around me are unarmed, you can brutalize us, and there's absolutely nothing that we can do to defend ourselves. When we go out, we're armed. Now we've evened the playing field. You know what the police say? They look at us and they say, it's not worth it to engage those guys.
We ain't turning our back on our sisters and brothers no more. We're not letting them divide us no more. We have given this country every sign.
that's what's the name of the game, self-defense. We're looking it through the clear glass of what it really means in the judicial portion of America. As we have mentioned before, if you have been living under a rock, Kyle Rittenhouse, who walked away scot-free, is every single thing white privilege has brought. But what do we do as blacks? And as we just heard from Nick Bazell, who is the founder of Elmer Geronimo Pratt, Pistol and Rifle Gun Club, and people like InFact, I guess one of our previous callers mentioned, these are organized, trained military men, many of them, and women, who want to continue to protect the most prized possession, which is ourselves. And when we seem to do that, black family, there always seems to be repercussions in the tune of life, sentences in these cases. So let's look at one of our revered Panthers, H. Rap Brown. Now, who is H. Rap Brown? Let's read a bit of his biography. His birth, he changed his name to Jameel Abdullah Al-Amin, but he was born Herbert Gerald Brown in October 4th, 1943, formerly known as H. Rap Brown. He is a civil rights activist, and some of the oppressors like to call him a black separatist as a negative connotation, but being a black separatist is not hating others. It's just protecting our own. Big difference. Now, during the 1960s, he was the fifth chairman of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Now, what is the SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee? This is significant because the title itself tells you exactly what it was all about. This was the principal channel of student commitment in the United States to the civil rights movement during the 60s. Emerging from 1960 from a student-led sit-in and segregated lunch counters, you can hear I have children behind me. God bless their souls. This started here in the segregated lunch counters of Greensboro, North Carolina, and in Nashville, Tennessee. Committee for Nonviolence sought to coordinate and assist direct action challenges to the civic segregation of political exclusions, as we see with our voting, it gets us nowhere, of African Americans from 1962. By the mid-1960s, the measured nature of grains made, the violence which they resisted, again, this is a key word, members of the Student of Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the SNCC, was nonviolent. So why is this not emphasized every time a Panther is convicted of something? It's never self-defense. It's always we are the aggressors. We are the ones that cause the trouble. And this is far from the truth. So Brown was born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and educated in a Catholic orphanage, where he clashed with his teachers as he did with his older brother, Edward. He became known as H. Rap Brown during the early 1960s, and his activism in the civil rights included involvement with the Student Nonviolent Committee, of which he was named chairman in 1967. That same year, he was arrested in Cambridge, Maryland, and charged with inciting a riot after he gave a speech there. So H. Rap Brown, you know, his first encounter with law enforcement while he was exercising his First Amendment rights already got him in trouble. Brown was introduced by the SNCC by his older brother, Ed Rapp, first visited Cambridge with the Cleveland Sellers in the summer of 1963 during a period of Gloria Richardson's leadership. And who was Gloria Richardson? The question. She was an American civil rights activist best known as a leader in the Cambridge movement, which is also another civil rights struggle. Many revolutionaries throughout the time. Now, H. Rap Brown later organized for the SNCC during Mississippi Freedom Summer, while transferring his studies to Howard University. Howard University, as we know, Black Family has been quite a doozy for our students the last 2 months while they were protesting for clean conditions and mold and mildew-free dormitories. Now they have, a couple of days ago, reached to a negotiation, and Frederick Wayne, Wayne Frederick, the Howard University president, has delivered such, I would say, a pretty stale response as to the demands that the students needed. And we'll talk later on about that. Representing Howard University's SNCC chapter, Brown attended a contentious civil rights meeting at the White House with President Lyndon B. Johnson during the Selma crisis of 1965. In 1966, he organized for the Black voter registration and enforcement and recently passed the Voting Rights Act in Greene County, Alabama. Elected SNCC chairman in 1967, Brown continued Stokely Carmichael's fiery support for Black power and the urban rebellions of the ghetto. And that Black family is what we continually need to work in because we don't have a choice in the color of the skin that we're in. So we must, as Elder Keeley mentioned, we must be in excellence in every little thing that we do, whether it's a job interview, whether it's a meeting, starting a meeting, whether it's communicating with your fellow patrons, we must do so in excellence. And when we don't, then we must learn how, because there's always someone that's teaching someone something. But are we all capable of being students? That's the mere question. H.R. Brown was a perfect example of not only being a apprentice student, but a great leader. In the late 1960s, Brown was tried on federal charges of indictment and riot and carrying the gun across state lines. Now, this is where we start, Black family. Does this sound familiar? Brown was tried on several federal charges of inciting a riot and carrying a gun across state lines. Isn't this verbatim what Kyle Rittenhouse did in 2020 from Kenosha? Didn't he travel across not one but two state lines with an AK-47? A secret 1967 FBI memo called Neutralizing Brown, he was targeted by COINTELPRO. And I can never pronounce this correctly, but COINTELPRO is a very significant portion of history that affected the Black Panther Party significantly. Now, at the time when H.R. Brown was charged, it was never proven. His attorneys in the gun violation case were civil rights advocate Murphy Bell of Baton Rouge, the self-described radical lawyer William Kunstler, and Howard Moore Jr., general counsel for the SNCC. Feminist attorney Flo Kennedy also assisted Brown and led his defense committee. Now, during his trial, Brown continued his high-profile activism. And this actually is what happening with one of our current brothers, Stephen Farrakhan Muhammad, also known as Brother Biko. He's unduly been incarcerated for very similar charges that were soon proven to be false. This is current for us. So Brown is now known to have no direct relationship with the alleged riot of 1967 because after that, the charges were later dropped. Now, Brown was originally to be tried in Cambridge, but the trial moved to Bel Air, Maryland. And in March 9, 1970, two SNCC officials, Ralph Featherstone and William Che Payne, died on a U.S. route south of Bel Air when a bomb on the front floorboard of the car exploded, killing both occupants. The bomb's origin is disputed, but some say the bomb was planted in an assassination attempt. Now, later in life, Brown disappeared for 18 months, during which he appeared on the FBI's list of the 10 most wanted. He was arrested after reported shootout with officers after what he to be an attempted robbery of a bar in New York City. Man, when I tell you, Black family, this particular scenario not only rings clear to a current case that our brother is going through, again, a store gun charge that was later to be dropped, but yet they are still detained. Now, Kyle Rittenhouse never saw the light of inside of a jail cell. Lucky for him. Now, in March 16, 2000, this is where H-Rap Brown's life began to turn. In Fulton County, Georgia, Sheriff Deputies Ricky Kinchin and Alderan English went into Al-Amin's home to execute an arrest warrant for his failure to appear in court after a citation for speeding and impersonating a police officer, allegedly. After determining that the home was unoccupied, the deputies drove away and shortly came back to a patrol car parked around and drove up to a Mercedes-Benz that was parked nose-to-nose. Officer English approached the Mercedes and told the single occupant to show his hand. The occupant opened fire with a .223 rifle. English ran between the two cars while returning fire from his handgun, but was hit four times. Kinchin was shot with a rifle and a 9mm handgun. The next day, Kinchin died of his wounds at Grady Memorial Hospital. English survived his wounds and identified H-Rap Brown as the shooter from six photos he was shown while recovering in the hospital. Now, this is where the story lies. It was this particular identification from the officer, that's H-Rap Brown, that did the shooting. And we're going to look at a current testimony of one of the last interviews that someone had did concerning Jamil Al-Amin. This is where in August, in March 9, 2002, nearly 2 years after the shooting, Al-Amin was convicted of 13 criminal charges, Black family, including Kinchin's murder. 4 days later, he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. He is currently sent to Georgia State Prison and in a maximum security facility near Reedsville, Georgia. Now let's go to a last interview of Jamal Al-Amin.
Yes, sir. This is Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. Coming to you live in that red
office. Yes, you heard correct. That was Fred Hampton Jr. actually interviewing Al-Amin.
Indeed, with our brother, our freedom fighter, Imam Jamil Al-Amin, known as many communities, Israel Brown. Imam, throughout your lifetime, response to your fine example of undying love for Black people and humanity in general. You've been attacked. Not only my generation, I'm talking about, you doing my daddy's thing, Chairman Fred Sr. I'd like to ask you, ma'am, give us just some basics on, your undying spirit, which we can literally feel over the fall. Express that to us. How do you maintain your undying spirit?
Again, all praise is due to Allah. Allah has said that he has created man for toil and struggle. Again, it is that sense of what's called conscious struggle, when you're able to engage in a conscious struggle against those people who oppose you being human. You know, you're always in a shell, so the fact that the Creator has given you that certain understanding and that energy to fight against oppression, he says.
So, back to our politics, hip-hop, every venue trying to win, and to some point, unity with the struggle. Can you give us some examples of various artists who had expressed some demonstrated some points of unity with the struggle during the era of the Black Power movement in the 60s?
Well, there were many artists who were forerunners in the struggle. many who were developed as a result of the struggle, which is always the case. But you had people like Curtis Mayfield, you know, who was making what was called message music. You had Nina Simone, you know, Gil Scott Heron. It's a list of people, even with Marvin Gaye when he came out with the What's Going On. You know, because these things had messages, and the message was related to the struggle and byproducts of the struggle. They didn't exist independent of struggle. Much of their thoughts and their understanding was formulated and developed in the struggle, but they were artists. So they spoke in terms of the skills and the crafts that they had. And this is what, you know, basically the artist does, that, you know, he draws from the energy that's around him. And there was a lot of positive energy during that time in trying to develop consciousness for people, for African Americans at that particular time.
Just on some updates, we like to refer to it as hood news. We can take, you know, in the struggle, we've been taking some hits, and we know that come with, you know, they come with the struggle, taking hits. Even the Trump Bell case they gave you, you know what I'm saying, that was a severe hit, you know what I'm saying, even but Chicago case of Brother Anna Patterson, who did 17 years, who's just re-snatched up from the streets. Also, we got some points that brother, we got word that Brother Vuaza Bowles, who did 31-plus years inside those, Mr. Farrakhan, and the case of Anna Patterson, also in the particular case of yourself, as well as a number of different other political prisoners, and the African anti-terrorism bill is going to be officially encompassed inside the upcoming March. Just want to give you that update to you now.
I do love, well, praise to the Lord. Give my love and salams, man, to all of the people, yeah, everybody that you named and those that you didn't, you know, who are active and engaged actively in struggle.
Yes, yes. Ma'am, the case that you was giving the Trump on charge, it was in Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times we get discussions, people like to refer to Atlanta, Georgia, the place that black people have quote-unquote made. And just, you know, in the case such as yourself, which a lot of your organized was done, you know, in the West End, and to this day, the impact that, you know what I'm saying, that you had on the community, it's blatant, it's present. In the place where you got so many, like, a lot of quote-unquote black institutions there, how do you attribute the fact that, I mean, it's not a class project?
They're from America, again. Most of them, they're black by popular demand. But when it comes, you know, when it's come down to it, they'll take black back, if it ain't popular with the man. So your evaluation as to who is with you and who's against you can't be made or based up just upon the race thing. What you see in terms of in Atlanta, you have people who have a vested interest in Atlanta being what it is. You know, the African Americans, you know, who are in authority, you know, quotes, you know, these people have a vested interest in Atlanta being what it is. If you really look at Atlanta, you see that Atlanta has really, really changed because the economic power of Atlanta still does not rest in the hands of African Americans.
Yeah.
If you look at Peachtree Street and then you look at Auburn Avenue, you see, you know, a great difference in those areas. I mean, you know, one is in terms of you have the white banks and you have all of the economics that are put
into a life of luxury with three hot meals and cable TV, so on and so forth. Let's expose the brutal realities that we subjected to inside the accounts. Could you give us a basic layout, just, you know, saying what's going on in the basic day-to-day situation?
Well, prison is prison, man. Again, and you expect that certain things in being in prison. It's not a place of luxury. It's not a place of comfort. Again, it's punitive. That's what the purpose of prison is. It means that this is a minor thing, man, in terms of what they do here, because they didn't make you, so they can't break you.
They didn't make you, so they can't break you. That's the word to the wise.
And you're not. The whole effort is not to make prison comfortable. You know, there's no effort to really to complain or make prison comfortable. That's one of the things that we have to really be conscious of and struggle as to what is valuable, but what should we struggle for, what should we struggle about. One of the things in the 60s that happened was that when we raised an issue, say, when people began to talk about equal rights, the opposition, the enemy said, no, say, y'all don't want equal rights, so you want to marry my daughter. So then he stopped talking about what he was talking about to address himself to what they were talking about. So he took you off the offensive and he put you on the defensive. So you reacting to what he's saying. And now, what is it you
you know, how do we determine who with us and who we're not with us? And this is why, you know, when I've been talking to the brothers, I'm trying to bring out at certain points. He didn't go through in his book, McCarthy, you know, he pointed out concerning group feeling. He said before there's any dynasty, before there's any group that's able to really enforce its will, you have to have love between yourself. You have to have, you know, group feeling. If you look at the 60s, one of the things that I think most significant and that signified most in the 60s as to the depth of what we thought group feeling in the 60s was that Ali Frazier fight. When we thought everything was, you know, we thought everything was everything, then you looked up and here you pitting two African-Americans against each other. So the African-American community took sides. So you have to understand in terms of the dynamics what you're working with. How do you develop the group feeling? How do you develop the nucleus, man? Says the prophet, peace and blessing before him, says, I've been nothing on his mind. So again, as a small, you know, group that's trying to organize, you know, to be an influence and bring the understanding to the larger group, you have to organize yourself first. And what is happening, if you look at the language that's being used in terms of making sense, they made that domestic violence. You're going to hit it, you're going to break it off, you're going to bust it up. It's crazy, man.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have to develop amongst ourselves that kind of understanding. So what it is that we're trying to bring? Yes,
right.
There's the secular and there's the spiritual thing. Both things have needs. Both things have an appetite. So, again, in dealing with that, you're dealing with the total person.
But you can dialogue with you now. Royce Chairman Fred Senior, I'm half the people. I'll be all day listening to a number of different organizations that, you know what I'm saying, officially get on board with us, you know what I'm saying, making a concrete commitment, you know what I'm saying, you know, pushing demand, you know what I'm saying, use with others, you know what I'm saying, get back out on the streets, so we say, what's up, call Fair Mall.
Nice.
I'll open up for you, man, you know, anything in general I may have missed, you know, just a issue that needs to be touched on.
I'm taking the youth, man. So I'm the one who least expected. I couldn't be no karma, no Jeffrey Dahmer. I pass on the pig, I'm going to the farmer. They need to excuse themselves, recuse themselves. No recess. I got to settle this mess. Going on our test. One Bushman that ain't black. Now the Aborigines want their name back. Blames come down on Kobe like he was Toby. Ain't about man charged against that new kid on the block who raped Janet before the whole planet. Truth metastasized into lurid fantasy. The pain. While you figuring, half triggering. 12 gauge. Are you looking for a new address? Try the obituary page. Struggle is the price you pay. For your soul, you're all doing life without parole.
And what a lot of people didn't know, Imam Jamil al-Amin was a prolific, he was a great writer. So he spent a lot of his time writing poetry and books. And that's definitely one of the best ways, even if you're locked up, it seems like forever, but it's not going to be. Once we uncover exactly his case.
You heard? I don't know. Do life without parole. That's it, man.
Man, love and respect. Ain't it, man? When I was a captain, we had a term, we said, popping corn, man. You know,
I'm eating up. There's still some benefit in it, man. You know, but you're dealing with the beast, man, and you have to understand. It's got the torment of souls, man. The people are flush. And you got these people who be turning keys for them, man.
Yeah.
Go with Dad Angola, Parchment, coming, Attica, Reedsville, looking back here, Pelican Bay.
Yeah.
And the way he got to do.
Yeah.
I don't expect him to do no more than he's doing.
Yeah.
But that just lets you know that's how real it is, man. This ain't no joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, win it to win it, man. You know, the thing is, nah, but the dude don't want to, you know, get in. If he ain't nothing but a minute, man, he don't get in it.
Yeah. Man, we're busy at any given time. That being said, man, I want you to give your contact information, you know, that your number where you located at.
Okay, I'm in Reedsville Prison.
Okay, you hear that? Reedsville? I'm going to spell that out after he's done.
It's in Reedsville, Georgia. The number that they have on me under is 1104651. And the address is 2164 Highway 147, Reedsville, Georgia, 30499.
we stress that now because we say it's important that correspondence must be maintained. I'm making a point that in such cases like in Illinois, we got prisoners who've been dead over 15 years, but the state still got them on count. We still getting paid for them.
Oh, yeah.
You hear that, Black family? 15 years or more, you got some of these political prisoners that have passed away, and the county that locked them up is still collecting residuals as if they're still alive. Now, if that doesn't tell you why we have to self-defend, then nothing else will. We are casualties of war for no reason but our melanin. And so we must protect it by any means necessary. So we're going to go rewind and listen to the actual address of where Imam Jamil al-Amin is still being held. 104651 is his number. So you could address him as Jamil al-Amin or Imam Jamil al-Amin. And he's located at Reidsville. He's still locked up at Reidsville, R-E-I-D-S-V-I-L-L-E, Reidsville, Georgia. At the location at 2164 Highway 147, Reidsville, Georgia, zip code 30499.
We need you to give your contact information, you know, that your number would be located there.
Okay, I'm in Reidsville Prison, in Reidsville, Georgia. The number that they have on me under is 104651, and the address is 2164 Highway 147, Reidsville, Georgia, 30499.
Family, I encourage you to write Brother Jamil because he, to this day, is unlawfully detained, just like many of our political prisoners. It's not a crime to speak up for your rights, but here in America, it is.
We stress that now because you said it's important that the correspondence must be maintained. I'm making a point that in such cases like in Illinois, they got prisoners who've been dead over 15 years, but the state still got them on count. They still getting paid for them.
Oh, yeah.
There ain't no accountability. We just got a foregone conclusion. You know what I'm saying? We just can't take for granted. You know, our loved ones, our freedom fighters, you know, are still on the scene. But what keeps things intact is, again, accountability. So we want to make sure we stress to all our listeners and everybody that they correspond with yourself as well as other political prisoners.
Yeah, I believe that's honorable, man.
Man, again, revolutionary love from Pastor Cubby, man. You know what I'm saying? And listen, we're gonna be touching back with you. This is Chairman Fred Happy Jr. coming to you live and direct with Imam Jamil al-Amin. They ain't coming from no TNT or...
All right. So write the brother a letter. Let him know that he is still loved and appreciated. Because what I'm about to show you, Black family, is not from us. It's actually from England themselves, who last year had told the public that they also believe Jamil al-Amin is innocent. I kid you not, you can't make this up. When you got white folks even vouching your innocence, it's got to be looked into. So why is our brother still in jail? So let's listen to the report from England based on our brother.
Paying for a retrial in his case, and the evidence he has presented is shocking to say the least. The most moving pieces of evidence presented has to be the constitutional rights violations committed by the prosecution and the confession under oath of another man to the crimes Mr. al-Amin has spent the last 20 years in prison for.
You hear that, Black family? Somebody came forward and stated, I did it. And yet, our brother is still in jail.
Well, after 20 years of claiming innocence from behind bars, it would seem that a glimmer of hope has arrived for former militant and civil rights leader H. Rap Brown, now known as Imam Jamil al-Amin. His son has launched a campaign for a retrial in his case, and the evidence he has presented is shocking to say the least. The most moving pieces of evidence presented has to be the constitutional rights violations committed by the prosecution and the confession under oath of another man to the crimes Mr. Al-Amin has spent the last 20 years in prison for. All men deserve fairness, but there are countless reasons why this man in particular deserves another shot.
That's it, Black family. You heard it from England. Okay, the Queen. The originators of slavery that vouches for the innocence of Imam Jamil al-Amin. He vowed for his innocence, Black family.
A fair shot at justice. If you would like to get involved, there is a petition that can be found at freeimamjamil.com. Sign and share it to help afford this man the opportunity to prove his innocence.
Let's get that website one more time, Black family. You have two options. You're going to start writing him a letter or support his website that his son put up. You got to show his family, especially his son, who is the future. We don't want his son to end up a casualty of these jail systems because we haven't done anything to bring our brother's innocence out. We don't need our brother's blood on our hands for no reason.
Deserves another shot, a fair shot at justice. If you would like to get involved, there is a petition that can be found at freeimamjamil.com. Sign and share it to help afford this man the opportunity to prove his innocence to us all in a fair and impartial proceeding in the eyes of the law. It's the least we can do.
Isn't it true that during that incarceration, you contacted the Federal Bureau of Investigation and told them that you had committed a murder and were involved in the shooting of a cop in March of 2000 in Atlanta, Georgia?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
All right. And
he's about to tell his name right here. There's a brother right here in the stand telling the prosecutor straight up the truth.
And you couldn't have because you were in prison in Nevada, right?
No, sir. I got out of prison in 2000 in February. I was on house arrest when the murder took place. You might want to check that out. I was on house arrest. I was staying at 2380 Journeyman Street, Southwest Atlanta. You just said that you were incarcerated in Las Vegas in 1997 through December of 2000. I went back to prison after that shooting. I was violated and sent back to prison after the police shooting.
This don't even make sense. Look at this prosecutor is telling the person who killed Kinchin, who killed the cop in that black Mercedes, I'm the one that did it. I was released from prison. And here, this prosecutor is trying to argue with this, with this perpetrator. Man, I tell you, this is a far cry from the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, a far cry.
You just said that you were incarcerated in Las Vegas in 1997 through December of 2000. I went back to prison after that shooting. I was violated and sent back to prison after the police shooting. That's why I said BP by my name. That's parole violation. If you look at the photo, it says BP beside my number. That means parole violation.
You violated your probation. You went back to prison.
Exactly. I violated after the shooting.
You were interviewed by the Federal Bureau of Investigation for that out there in the hot prison, not in July.
Yes, sir.
Of that year?
Yes, sir.
And he ruled you out and said you did not commit that murder in Las Vegas, correct?
I don't know.
I mean, that murder in Atlanta.
I have no idea what his conclusion was, sir.
All right. You weren't arrested for it, were you?
No, sir. I was not.
In fact, another person was tried and convicted.
Jamil Al-Amin, yes, sir.
Yeah.
There you go. Why was Jamil Amin taken into custody if a man is coming forth and telling them that he did it? You do have noble people in this earth. I do vouch for that. But it's highly unusual, Black family, highly unusual that a brother would take the fall for another brother in a murder case like this. Think about it. Many of our people that have been accused wrongfully for murders, I'm not talking about the ones who actually did the killing. That's a whole different subject. We're talking about the hundreds of thousands of innocent black men and women who are sitting in these cages right now for a crime they did not commit. They're not trying to hear it. Even when you have the person that says, I did it, right? As we see in the case with Julius Jones, how this young black man was almost executed on November 18th. And for 22 years, he's been stating his innocence. But what does J. Kevin Stitt, that fat bastard of a governor, stated? Okay, so we're going to spare his life, but hey, life without the possibility of parole. Same exact case in Jamil Aliman's case, facing life without the possibility of parole.
And once again, it seems to me like you were getting a lot of...
I was shot.
I'm sorry?
I was shot. March of 2000. It happened March 17th of 2000.
Your Honor, we can take a break right now. Come back.
I'm sure you do. You need to take a long-ass break on that one. I think when a brother tells you that he's been shot and knows the time and the date, that's something you really don't make up, right? A brother or sister that's been shot, they usually don't forget time and date of when it happened. And because I'm not even going to state his name, I want you to do the research, do some homework. Because everything is there in black and white. This is an innocent man, just like Julius Jones. But the difference is they are not white.
Signing off.
So what do we have you now? This is the current situation that's happening with Jamil Amin. He is still awaiting for a trial right now in November 2020. Why is that? So we're going to take a break, and if we have any more calls, we're going to swing it back to our imam, Sheikh Akbar, if there's any other callers that may would like to chime in on self-defense.
Let's see, who do we have here now? We've got a 646 caller, a New York caller online. Let's see what they have to say on the subject. At 646-939, you're actually live here on Black Power Radio. I wanted to welcome you to Black Power Radio. Thank you for calling. 646, you're live on Black Power Radio. You've done the silent treatment to me before, but at least this time I thought they would speak up. At 646-973, you are live here on Black Power Radio. Is they're not speaking up, I can go right on down to my man Fred. It's Fred, because he's there with his hand, and I know he has something to say. Let's reach out to Fred. It's Fred at the West Side. Fred is Fred at 707-805. You're actually live here on Black Power Radio. Assalamu alaikum and Black Power. If he's still there. If it's not the sound, if I have a tech problem. Brother Fred is Fred. I don't know if he's reaching out to us. I don't know if he's on air. At 707, he might be sleeping right now. 707-805, you're actually live on Black Power Radio. We're going right back over to our doctor, Mella Desire, the host of Black Power Radio Sunday, the Black Panther Woman, the whole bunch of good going on here at Black Power Radio. So, Dr. Mella Desire.
All right. So we are planning a huge event, May 19th to the 22nd. Well, actually 21st, but 22nd we'll take that too, right here in the heart of Los Angeles. It'll be a three-day forum of excellence to show what we would like to do for our youth. And we have honored our most recent Nipsey Hussle, as well as other musicians, and have a music forum that will tie in. This is what I'd like to update for, is new music. So what brings people together than music? And we want to have difference of lyrics. So we're going to go into what happened with a most recent killing of young Dolph and why the importance of music and the lyrics that we listen to, why is it important for us to have something that's positive? So young Dolph, just like Nipsey Hussle, were not only rappers, but they were people that were about to change their community. So young Dolph from Memphis, Tennessee, was about to buy the block, build some businesses for his black neighborhood, same as Nipsey Hussle in March 31st, 2019. So what do we want to do? We want to honor them and continuing the legacy of urban planning. So what is the message that America is trying to send to us? Whenever a young black man from the streets who makes it into music, who doesn't want to just make music, but wants to become an investor in their community like never before, is there any protection for them? In the case of Nipsey Hussle, it was another rival, another brother. And this is where I say black-on-black crime is unacceptable. Because we are all we got. What business do we have lifting the gun on someone who is trying to save the community? You got to be a special kind of garbage to do something like that. This is why I urge our black parents to cut out the sports and entertainment. Cut out the budget for your 19-inch weeds or 9-inch nails. Reinvest more in fashion. Driving, making sure our neighbors know we have a fancy car. But the education of our children so they don't grow up to be, I'll probably curse only one time on this program because I feel it's necessary. The fuck shit, excuse my language, children, that come out of character and take the lives of these kings. How dare you take the life of one who is doing something? How dare you? When you got Negroes on the corner doing absolutely nothing but drinking and smoking and talking shit all day, they get to breathe another day of fresh air. While young black men who want to be somebody and do something and actually are going to do it, they're not talking, they're not internet superstars. They are real community workers. How dare you take their life? And how dare you be a brother or a sister involved in that? The whole purpose for self-defense is for us to defend ourselves against our oppressor, not defend ourselves from ourselves. Why do you think they give us jail sentences of 30, 40, 50 life sentences? Because they see that we don't respect each other. This is a clear onslaught of productivity for the black community. And we are the only ones to blame for that, black family. Each one of us have a task for us to do in the society that we live in. Everybody's task is different, but in the end, it's all the same. It is to be productive. It is to show excellence. As Achille told us earlier, no matter what you do, you cannot repeat it more than 1,000 times. You've got to be excellent. They're looking at us when we sit there arguing, when we can't communicate with each other, when our children can't read or write, They're looking at you, parent. Because by the time that child is 18 years old, they already know what they're going to do. They make sure that they groom our young black kids in the hood for prison from the time that they're small. That's why school to prison pipeline is a real term. It is not a fantasy. Education is the only way to kill the enemy. Bearing arms is secondary. It should not be primary, black family. We bear arms to defend ourselves, not to portray ourselves as violent criminals as they like to portray us, right? So we got to do better on how we are living our daily lives. The God that you say that you serve is who you're representing. So when you're lying and cheating and stealing and wavering over your own brother, killing your own brother, you are showing the world the God that you serve. Why would I want to serve a God that's violent, that's backbiting, that's lying, that's conniving? I don't want to serve that God you're serving. No, thank you. That's why people have a hard time looking at Christians, because Christians use the word Yeshua, Christ, and they do the worst things in society. They are the oppressors. They use the word of God to make sure we keep enslaved, right? The white Jesus concept is not a fantasy. It is real. But if we do not build excellence within ourselves, we will always look like the cockroach they want to stamp on. They want to exterminate.
Now shift to the murder of rapper who was shot and killed at a cookie shop in his hometown of Memphis. The rapper, whose real name was Adolph Gordon Jr., was called an indie rap pioneer by Spotify and was just 36 years old.
I go so hard, I make them hate me, man. My whole life I'm moving. AP, blue red, so blue AP, y'all. Too much, I don't need AP.
Gordon collaborated with multiple artists from Rick Ross to Megan Thee Stallion, who reacted to his death by tweeting, "I am so sick right now. I am in disbelief, praying for his family and friends. Rest in peace to my friend, a true legend, Dolph." Join us now to talk more about young Dolph's life and career as ABC News contributor and Sirius XM radio host, Mr. Mike News. Mike, thank you so much for being here during such sad circumstances. And for those of us who may not be as familiar with young Dolph's history, tell us a little bit about it.
Hey, Lindsay. Good evening. Great to see you at a special circumstance. Young Dolph was a father of two children. Young Dolph was a husband. Young Dolph was someone who had a huge impact in his community of Memphis. Young Dolph is known in his community as a philanthropist. He did a lot of turkey giveaways for holiday season every single year. And sadly enough, he was actually back home in Memphis to participate in his annual turkey giveaway. So the tragedy and the irony that he was home doing good for the community, that he was actually gunned down and murdered in his community. As an artist, a young Dolph, as you mentioned, Lindsay, was a pioneer. It is difficult being an independent artist, but young Dolph had the ability to rise in the charts. He had albums that were Billboard charts. He charted a couple of times with the albums that he had. He worked with some of the most well-known artists of our time, such as Meg Thee Stallion. He's also been left behind. You can see the tributes that are coming in from so many people in the hip-hop and music industry that are paying tribute to Young Dolph. Young Dolph is also a...
We're not interested. We're not interested in these tributes. Same thing. When Nipsey died, he was a pillar for Los Angeles. And the brief advice that he gave me to encourage me to run for office was something that I seriously considered. Because Nipsey was an urban planner. He wasn't just a rapper. He was putting it in the very community that didn't give a shit to do anything about urban planning, let alone read or write a blueprint. But the moment Nips died, hundreds of thousands of people flocked to Crenshaw and Slauson in the thousands to honor a man who they themselves won't do a doggone thing to emulate what he was doing. Make it make sense with these tributes. So Meg Thee Stallion, I want you to invest in affordable housing for black families in Memphis, Tennessee, since you honor him so much. In the between time, you and Lizzo are twerking all over the place. Try to find some time on how to urban plan and continue the legacy that Young Dolph was doing. So I want you musicians to sit a couple of seats down for a minute. We're tired of your lyrics that promote violence, that promote women in bitches and hoes and unflattering light. I don't want to hear another rap song about how you're cooking, you're selling, you're flinging dope. It is getting old. You live by the gun, you will die by the gun. In few exceptions, like Philando Castile, Sandra Bland, Ahmaud Arbery, those are the cases where no matter what you do, you will end up a certain way. But I'm saying there are ways that we can prevent it. We don't have to aggravate our neighborhoods by just shooting them up. Our kids, our gangsters, our gang members, so to speak, those are our most brilliant students, are the ones out in the street gangbanging, so to speak. I'm talking about the youth. I ain't talking about the OGs. OGs, you should have been hung it up. You should have been transferred and changed. Like our brother Imam Jamil Al-Amin, he didn't even commit a crime, and he's turning his life around. Because I know for a fact that he's not going to stay life in prison. I know for a fact that he's not going to remain in there. Him and many of our political prisoners, they are wrongfully convicted because they are outspoken, because you are too cowardly to do that. But do you protect our messengers? Do we protect our prophets? We already seen what happened to Malcolm X. We see what happened to Martin Luther King. So there's no different with what Nipsey and Dolph have gone through. Black men, intelligent black men, are the most attacked. Intelligent black women are the most unprotected. Why is that, black family? We got to change. We got to change that atmosphere, because we cannot get respect from anybody until we respect ourselves.
Messenger of the community. Lindsay, as you know, and as our audience may or may not know, hip-hop has always been a mess of the community. Hip-hop through the music has always told us the impact of our society and the community and what the community was going. And so the hip-hop community and the music community at large has offered really, really incredible talent and incredible human being.
But it seems like this is just one of many, that he's perhaps just the most recent young rapper to be shot in recent years. Here on ABC News Live, we definitely have covered the deaths of Nipsey Hussle and Pop Smoke. Can you remember an era in recent memory where rappers with such elevated profiles were gunned down like this?
Lindsay, I don't. I have to kind of just drop my head as you're just naming off a list of rappers who are gone too soon. Too tragic. We've seen that happen too recently within the last 1 to 2 to 3 years. You're right. We haven't seen this since Tupac Shakur, since the Biggie, since the Death Row days, since the West Coast versus the East Coast days. That you would thought a lot of that was kind of laid to rest. But I think, Lindsay, the advent of social media has really allowed more of this type of dynamic to occur, unfortunately, in ways that we really haven't seen it. But I think it's something, Lindsay, as I mentioned this a few moments ago, how hip-hop and the music has always been a mess of the community. I know, you know, I'm not here to talk about politics, but as we began to think about the human infrastructure bill that is possibly being passed in Congress, I think it's important that elected officials begin to look at what is happening in the community, and particularly in marginalized communities,
where a job loss is at an all-time high. Yeah, I think job loss is the least of our worries. I would like to walk out my door without dodging bullets, please. Can that happen, black family? Can our children walk safely out there without getting hit by a stray bullet? Talking to the dum-dums who cannot aim and kill innocent bystanders. I'm talking to the garbage who decides to wake up and take out a prolific leader in their community doing something. So within the next couple of days, there have been two suspects that have been identified. The white Mercedes-Benz already been identified at an abandoned house where they have shot videos in the past. And the so-called suspects, you know, I guess got a little heated, figured out that they were being spotted and, you know, removed some incriminating evidence in the past couple of days concerning any connection to Young Dolph. So let's go to the West Coast, where we just revisit Nipsey Hussle's death and how it affected Los Angeles, as Young Dolph is affecting Memphis, Tennessee.
Mourning the loss of a rapper who was more than a Grammy-nominated artist to South Los Angeles, Nipsey Hussle was a local hero who made giving back to his community a priority.
Hold on a second. Let me escape this. So I need to get back. Now, what we are planning on doing this May is exactly continuing the work that these beautiful kings have started for them to actually have housing built in their honor, for them to have affordable housing, not only for the community, but for the youth, so they can know that, hey, if I try to be something in my neighborhood, will I be gunned down as well? This puts so much fear, unnecessary fear, in the minds of our young baby cubs. They don't want to excel as much anymore because they see the consequences to it. This is the message that's being portrayed, black families. That's why I ask our black fathers to please just cut out sports for the next 6 months and focus in on the important things of your community. Get to know the law. I don't want you to call and you don't even know your politicians. Don't do it. Because right now, angry, very angry of the senseless killing of our young people. Very angry. Because we are able to do something about it. And we are not. So what is it going to take, black family, for us to really, really change things? Let's take a listen before we listen to Nipsey. Let's take a listen for Louis Farrakhan for a second. Because he echoed sentiments of exactly how we should all feel, of how our young black men who are doing something will just be taken out without a record in the world, without a repass in the world.
Back together.
There's our Honorable Louis.
We have to come back together and lift up a light in the darkness, or we are sentenced to death. Because I'm tired of grieving mothers taking their babies to cemetery, and we can't wait to smoke another one. Tired of seeing us bowing down, saying prayers in hypocrisy while our people are dying in the street.
Now we're going to play that back. I want to revisit with Nipsey Hussle and how that impact the West Coast as well.
Mourning the loss of a rapper who was more than a Grammy-nominated artist to South Los Angeles, Nipsey Hussle was a local hero who made giving back to his community a priority.
Let today be the day that we start to understand what his death and what his life truly meant.
Family, friends, and adoring fans packed the 21,000-seat Staples Center, where just 2 months ago, Hussle attended the Grammys with his fiance, actress Lauren London, performing a special tribute, music icon Stevie Wonder. In his youth, Hussle was affiliated with gang culture, but later denounced gun violence. He drew praise for trying to help the inner city community where he grew up, investing in businesses and hiring neighbors.
He was extremely humble, and he never forgot where he came from.
Hustle, whose real name is Ermias Acidem, was shot and killed outside of his clothing store on March 31st, where today fans also gathered to pay tribute. A community that so admired and adored Hustle is saying goodbye and remembering his legacy and his message.
Yeah, a community that adored him so much that for 2 years now since he had passed, I don't see not one structure of housing. I don't see not one business put up in the name of Nipsey. So this is a direct message to Black Sam, wherever you are, my brother, I need you to come out and finish this job. Because you have first-hand knowledge of the greatness Ermias was to us. The weekend before he died, on March 31st, he had a meeting with the city of Los Angeles, in which we're going to cover in depth in the month of December, in 2 weeks. We're going to cover in depth the life of Nipsey Hussle and Young Dolph and how these two lives, we need to carry on their work. And these two guys specifically, East Coast and West Coast, representing, they had the same bloodline, meaning that they have the Yeshua spirit. They have the God spirit in them, that they never forgot where they came from, but they didn't stay in it. They did absolutely everything a person can do to change their lives and touch the lives of many. And for that alone, I don't want to see another tribute, another memorial, until I see some housing, some youth centers buying the blocks that they were buying, because Young Dolph was about to buy the block in Memphis, literally. Nipsey was about to buy the block on Crenshaw and Floss, and he was about to buy it. That's what he was meeting with on April 3rd. But they cannot even stay alive, Black family, for us to understand the importance of who they really were.
There's a bigger purpose. There's a bigger cause that we need to unite. We need to stop gun violence.
As the city of Los Angeles remembers an artist whose legacy continues to grow even after his death. And now I want to bring in Liza Lucas and Liza. There were so many great moments from this funeral, and now they're trending online.
That's right. Some of those most powerful moments came from Lauren London. Take a listen to what she had to say.
My heart hears you. I feel you everywhere. I'm so grateful that I had you. I love you beyond this earth. And until we meet again, the marathon continues.
Well, at one point during her eulogy, she had everyone from Los Angeles stand up in the crowd. What a moment. That's also being shared online, as is the speech from Nipsey's brother right there. You can see him gripping the mic. The emotion in his voice was just palpable as he spoke of their child and the impact. And then talk about impact. Also read a celebration of life with a letter from former President Barack Obama, who said Nipsey saw potential. He saw hope.
Yeah. Thank you, Obama, for your letter. Can you continue the work, you and Michelle? You see that Nipsey saw hope, but did you step in and said, let's complete the project that he was currently doing? Give me a copy of the blueprint? No, but you want to write a letter to tell us how much you care. No shade to Obama. I know there's a lot of Obama lovers out there. Don't come and attack me. I'm just calling truth to power right now. We need to see less dialogue. So let's hear what our Honorable Louis Farrakhan has to say concerning his feel on how our young Black kings are dying like flies.
We have to come back together and lift up a light in the darkness, or we are sentenced to death. Because I'm tired of grieving mothers taking their babies to cemeteries. And we can't wait to smoke another one. Tired. And seeing us bowing down, saying prayers in hypocrisy while our people are dying in the street. able to charge me with not teaching you, your blood is not on my hands, but the blood of the people that are dying in the street. They're on the hands of every one of you who fail in your duty as a civilized man. On my hands, but the blood of the people that are dying in the street. They're on the hands of every one of you who fail in your duty as a civilized man.
So which category do you fit in there? Are we innocent? Will we have our black king perish at the hands of our own?
Yeah. We should take over.
It ain't about wearing no damn long white dress.
But the honorable minister.
I'm sorry, what?
The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is putting a pertinent cross-examination question from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. What is the duty of a civilized man? And the duty of a civilized man, the answer, if I can remember it correctly, is to teach the uncivilized, the savage, the barbaric man, the principles of civilization and cultural refinement. So he's talking to every student that has ever come and test with the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad to do your duty as a civilized man, to teach the parents, to teach the children, to teach our community. We should be in these community centers, in the rec center, at the bus stop, on the bus, on the train, in the cab, in the Uber car, Scuba car, Lyft car, everywhere you look, everywhere you go. There should be a student that came in touch with the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and taught him civilization and teach him cultural refinement, teach him how to treat the woman, how to treat our children. And these teachings are extensive inside and outside of the Nation of Islam, but most closely and most definitely every student of the Nation of Islam should keep your duty to Allah, Subhanahu wa Ta'ala, the Most High God, and to obey those teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and then say, who can confess now and bear witness, huh? And who will not go astray after you have heard thine teaching? Black power, assalamu alaikum.
Black power. Black power.
That's where we've been taught here today. All praise is due to Allah. Two students of Elijah. Black power.
I'm sorry, yeah, we're finishing up Louis Farrakhan's speech. It's about one more minute.
Accountable.
We have to go forward with the Christian, with the Muslim and the Hebrew, the Black Panther, the NAACP, the SCLC, the Urban League, all have to charge. These organizations have the same teaching as the mosque, the church, and the synagogue, and the Hebrew house, and the Rasta man have all the same teachings, and we have to be accountable for that teaching. Even the Boy Scouts, I remember my law. A Boy Scout is trustworthy. Look how big that is. The Muhammad was first charged with, he's known as the trusted one. Trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, brave, thrifty, clean, and reverent. Huh? He starts out at the Christian teaching in the Boy Scout, or at the Muslim teaching, and end at the Christian teachings at the end is reverent. How many are you going to bus stop? You're going to the train station. You're going to catch the cab or the Uber ride, and you speak to a young Black man, and he's not friendly, not helpful, not courteous. In fact, he's discourteous and rebellious. Don't stop there. Mm-hmm. Some of the young sisters, teenage girls, more obstinate and rebellious than the boys. Around attack, discourteous, cursing at maybe sometimes at the top of their lungs with obscene curse words, known at the bus stop for cursing, known to be on the back of the bus, raised in hell, all the way to school, all the way from school, come on. Huh?
Yeah.
So we have to get in, we have to shake that young girl. Don't be afraid to reach out to our young people and go organize, you SCLC, you NAACP. Come on here, Masonic Eastern Star, we talked about, is that right? Come on here.
That's right.
And you, it's your job. You just can't leave it at the seat of the religious house and say, there you are, Muslim, there you are, Christians, and there you are, Hebrews. Jews, Christian, Muslim, y'all go straighten it out. No, why did you form organizations? You came out of the church. You came out of the mosque and the synagogue to form these organizations. What in the hell are you going to do, Alpha, the Kappa, the Phi Beta Sigma? Come on. What the hell are you organized for on these campuses if you're not going to go back into the young people? We just came off of Howard University challenging the young people to do a non-internet related task, to go back and get a young man on the block. Give me at least three. Every collegiate one that made it to a freshman at Howard, every one who made it as a freshman or sophomore at Howard U, Hampton U, at SCLC, all of these young people have to go and get another young person, maybe younger or much younger than yourself, and see to it that they get to the collegiate or the university level. This is what the kind of focus, this is the kind of discipline, this is the kind of talk you got to give at the microphone. Don't keep handing Crump the microphone if he ain't giving no instruction. Don't keep giving Al Sharpton your microphone if he's not telling
That's
you
right.
these instructions that I'm repeating here today. Don't even give Farrakhan your mic if he ain't saying what he just said. And don't give it to the assistant minister out the church. Huh? Don't give it to Reverend Jesse Jackson if he's not telling you these instructions. You let Jesse, he said, and be the mentor. Let him ride along. And you show Jesse Jackson, reteach Al Sharpton how to go in the streets and get them. They got them in there, but they're not doing the job. I'm telling you, they're not coming out of that church. Big old Anglican church. B-O-A-A-M-E. Come on, A-M-E. African Methodist Episcopal. Today's your day at the bat. Come on. And then you take out they got outreach programs. They're just as effective as the Muslim. It's just they maybe having a ride at the high-end discipline that the Muslim had been recognized and the Black Panther been recognized. Your expectation level is much higher. Come on. When you talk Muslim and you talk Black Panther, you're expecting that the results have been high, been known for doing the work harder. Come on here and feed somebody. Dr. King said, so your living won't be, as Farrakhan said, not in vain. He said that I tell them to forget about your education. Forget about where I went to school, come on. But you tell them that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. died trying to help somebody. Come on. Yes, he did. So that my living what would not be in vain. You got to stop living senseless lives and stop being just an empty vessel for drug head, like you say. You putting them in the casket. You're putting them in the ground. And you can't wait to get a hit. Come on. Come on, here. Huh? You little loud smoker, you ocean and rain smoking brothers and sisters. They can't get their own weed harder than on crack cocaine. Come on. My. You got to get them. You got to go to them specifically, tell them in your house. You can't reach. Then you go next door and knock on somebody that got the courage to tell them. God damn it, you got to stop smoking weed like you're a crackhead. Start being a man or woman in your house. And start worrying about your mother. Take your mother to drink H2O water and a tuna fish sandwich with a little peanut butter and jelly, half a cheese butter and jelly. Take it across the street. I know people personally. Mama lived right across the street, been there 50 years. They're so honored and that's been made so insensitive by drugs and the drug culture in the community. They won't even take mama a drink of water, tuna fish sandwich, and a half a peanut butter and jelly across the street.
That's right.
So mama have nice lunch because they're just so mean-spirited. Give all the attention over corporate business. Keeping your Lex parked next to the big boss on the third tower. You got a lifestyle, living nice in the vanilla suburbs in the gated community. Oh, but I know you're back there because I've been back there to talk with you. And I'm telling you, come on out of that house and let's go work on this community. That's how you do it, brother and sister. That's how you do it, Dr. Miller Desire. You have to command. You got to be a drill sergeant on yourself first and drill sergeant your way to your neighbor house, to another on the corner house. Well, you know the trouble. You got to go in the dope house and shake that goddamn dope house with your guns drawn, with the hammers cocked back. And go right on in there and say, buddy, you got to lay your drugs down because we're taking too many body bags in this street and the surrounding street, so we're going to stop this to be a dope house. We're going to turn it into a mosque, a synagogue, or a church, or SCLC chapter. We're going to make us an NAACP here on the corner, and we're going to stop all this foolishness, and let's get serious with our community. And we preach this from sunup to sundown. Everybody take a shift. You got 8 to 12, and then when you go from 8 to 12, go down. And from 8 to 12, you do it, keep doing it, and then you move on in to your 3 to 11 shift, and somebody got to work midnight. And you work midnight and work it all the way around the clock until we get justice. You got to have that kind of discipline and commitment in order to make a change in the black community. I've examined these circumstances, like I say, at the collegiate level, when the administrator was so insensitive, a decent dormitory that didn't have mold and mildew on the walls and in the sink and in the living quarters and all in the kitchen and places, mold and mildew, and seen it and examined with my own eyes and sniffed it with my own nostrils, and it was not even sensitive enough to have a sign. A good manager, Ms. Melody, Mrs. Dr. Melody, I would assign a staff to see to it that all these dorms are cleaned out of mildew. See to it another staff. See to it that every student standing here has an assigned bed and a place to sleep and eat and prepare for the next day. They were so insensitive that they wouldn't even come to the Burn Center. They wouldn't even come by and flip a few burgers and find out what was the problem. How can we meet? What did we send extended staff? How can we meet the needs of the students? They played a tug of war. They were powered and geared by the white Zionist Jews who had money and influence on the campus. They're too busy changing a goddamn textbook to go ahead and meet the needs and make sure that our children on campus have a change of clothes, a bath, a shower, and three hots and a cot. They're not even sensitive enough. So we got to change that. So the people that know that's in the Muslim, that's in the Panther, that's in the Christian, that's in the Hebrew, that's in the Rasta man, that's in, yes, you Buddhists, come on to the table with Nam Yeho, Ran Ye Kyo, and let's go and do something to influence a change in the black community. That's precisely the prescription and how you do it, Dr. Miller Desire. And, of course, we could go on. I could go on you for 8, 9, 10 hours without stopping. But I'm telling you straight up, use that little bit of formula and see if Shaky Mama is giving you the righteous teaching to get our community back on track. The white man don't even think about it. He can't even help you because he can't even help himself. He can't even help anybody because he's helpless. He's a victim of his own insurrection. So he can't help nobody do anything. He can't do anything for himself. For he is, again, an enemy to himself. He will turn on himself, as you saw him in the Rittenhouse. That's the other half of it. He turned on himself. You saw it at Las Vegas. Why did the white man, Donald Trump, ask the pertinent assault or cross-examination question? Why does a man that has everything, why would he shoot up the place like that and kill and leave 59 body bags, 59 known body bags, and might have been another 100 or so injured? Why would a man do something like that? Like he's deranged. He's living in a million-dollar estate. He's driving whatever choice of vehicles. He drops about $250,000 on the crap game table and the roulette wheel and spinning over the slot machines for $250,000 and walk out like he spent $10 or $20 on less than $100. Means nothing when you got everything if the gas goes to $10. So why does a man do that? Because he's bent. He's subjugated and he's obligated, he's committed to be a number one killer, a number one killer of the black man, because every one of these killers, all of them from Columbine to Noline, from Las Vegas back to Florida, or from Pennsylvania on back to Chicago, where all these mass killings said they were looking for black men and women to kill. To kill somebody black. And then the Nixon line was the white man or woman that and sing and do entertainment. Did anybody follow these statistics like I do? Come on. Who are these killers looking for? They're looking for the black to kill the black. And the white, that the wiggers. Wiggers are whites that want to be niggers. That's who they're looking for, to kill them first. That's a threat to the blonde hair and the blue eyes. You got to think over what you do. I'm just giving you a few chips and tidbits, brother and sister, so you can begin to figure out the riddle, unscramble the riddle, and do something to rid yourself of this riddle. I hope someone took notes tonight and take it to those that weren't here, because this is the formula, brother and sister. I'm going to have to seal it up and say the formula for getting righteousness back into the black community. The white man has been written, no, he wrote himself off as number one killer. He's not interested in cleaning up the black community. He's not interested in cleaning up his community. He just wants a party and have some sex. That's all he wants. White man don't want nothing else. He's not interested in building anything. Just get a drink, a smoke, and some sex, and that's his day. We took it off and went to an extreme. But if we go away from the Mediterranean diet, the Mediterranean mentality, the thinking ways and habitations, if we leave the Euro thinking and come to ourselves, I just thank you so much for that time. I don't know if 7 came back. Did 707 come back? Black Power?
Black Power, y'all. How y'all doing tonight? Y'all had a good show tonight again. And I'm telling y'all what Ospar said, and you said that dude should not have got off that trial. He should have went down to the, you know what I'm saying? But they let him go. So this is crazy out here, you know what I mean? But I'm saying to everybody in the radio land, we got to get people justice. And that's all we're trying to do. But see, all these crap going on down here, like Ospar said, you said, ain't nobody listening. Nobody's listening at all. So we got to keep on moving with the troops, and we're going to get justice for people who understand us, you know? So let's go back to the Black Power Radio with my main man, Ospar.
Thank you, Brother Fred. We're glad that you're there on that west side, holding it down in Vallejo, in Fairfield, in Oaktown, in the San Francisco Bay Area. We know that you're doing what you can do to make a difference. And you are a champion on that west side, and you are joined by Dr. Mellow Desire, and there are many more with Brother R.W. Aliki?
Yeah, Akili.
Akili, that's
Brother
what I want.
Akili.
Brother
yeah.
Akili was wonderful tonight, and he shared with us, and he's potentially still online. I wonder if he had any closing remarks. Let's reach out and see if 323-323-3227-99 if you're live, if you have any closing.
Primarily, we want, if you can, remind us, yeah, I would like to remind us, Umoja Karamu, and exactly what we need
Black
to do.
Power. Black Power, you dare 323-323-7999. Are you Black Power?
Yes, I'm here.
Black Power, what you
I'm,
call
I'm here.
Comments, your contact information, all of the stuff to get us in touch and up to snuff, up to date with Brother R.W. Alike. Black Power. As-salamu alaykum.
You want me to leave my contact numbers again? I'll
yeah.
do that. Is that okay?
You have the option of closing comments and your any of your contact information. Want to give it loud and clear, Black.
Yeah.
First of all,
left.
I want to thank you. I want to thank you for having me to speak. I really appreciate that, and I want to thank you for the work that you're doing, and that look. We have a lot of work to do. There's no time to be thinking everything is easy. I didn't tell you it's going to be easy. It's going to be hard. But that don't mean that we cannot rise to the occasion. This is our time. And it's our time to shine. And I meant that to rhyme time. But you can reach me at R.W. Akil on Facebook. And you can reach me at my email address is Kwanzaa, K-W-A-N-Z-A-A, Gwaride, G-W-A-R-I-D as in David, E, at gmail.com. And I have also Black Student Union, Carry the Tradition, another Facebook page. You can reach me on a number of different platforms, so please reach out. And let me know what you're thinking. Let me know how we can collaborate. And, oh, one other thing. Our new year starts on December 26th. That means
right.
12 midnight, December 25th going to December 26th. That's our year. That's the beginning of our new year.
Mm-hmm.
So let's keep that in mind, that we bring in this coming year of Imani, the year of faith. And let's roll up our sleeves. Get ready. Oh, and I have another thing to have to say. Please forgive me. I hope I haven't run out of time.
Yeah. All right.
Anza.
You're fine.
Anza, the winter solstice. Every year we do a walk and run at whatever day the winter solstice falls on. And the 21st falls in the middle, not in the middle, I think it falls on a Tuesday this year. But we do a walk and a run. It's a 3.5-mile walk and run. And no matter where you are, I encourage you to get out there, do some physical activity. If all you can do is jump up and down or hop or jump rope, please do that. If you can walk. Do you some push-ups. Do you some sit-ups. Do you some jogging. Think in terms of getting in shape. I'm not saying that you're going to be running a 400-meter relay. I'm saying do what you personally need to do to get in some type of meaningful shape. It'll help your life, it'll help your health, and make things a lot easier for the things you seek to do. Anyhow, Black Power. And I will be seeing you tomorrow evening. Or hearing
right,
you from
sir.
You tomorrow evening.
We look forward,
okay?
yeah. look forward to
that's right.
All right now.
Continue.
Thank you.
We will tomorrow
Thank you.
We will continue the discussion of the Mask of Blackness, and yeah, we're going to go thespian. So for those who love theater, this is a very, very particular story that we all need to know in 1605 what exactly people thought of black people. And so we'll cover that tomorrow. Again, The Mask of Blackness by Ben Jonson, a very significant play and why it's important. So thanks you again, Imam, for having a great show, and appreciate for all the callers who came in and chimed in, Lightning, hopefully Brother Harold. And we'll see you again. So just remember to keep yourself in line with the God that you serve. So if you want to represent Allah, represent Allah in excellence. If you want to represent God in your way in excellence. But however you do it, we are watching. I'm Dr. Mellow Desire, and I'm out.
All right, that's Black Power. All of you, please, 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 take these links and pass them on. The show you seen passed around today. You must send those links out, brother and sister, to those that really could benefit from these format on these broadcasts. Please send them out to raise black people up, to get us back to a form of discipline and honor and respect in our own community, honor and respect from others, as well as refining and rejuvenating what is already in us to pass this message on to those that could benefit. So please send those links out to your friends. You got 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. I know I've got over 5,000 friends. I had to delete the non-activists on my line on some of this stuff. You got Instagram. You got NoHam. You got Twitter Glitter. You got Facebook and NoHook. You got TikTok around the block. Everything that you got from Twitter to Glitter, put it on your link and let them know that there's a voice that's a saving force in the lives of black people. Local, national, and international networks can benefit from these links and these tapes there. The radio broadcast will play, and it has something to say, something effective. You are no better, brother and sister, than your ability to do effective community outreach. We have a military branch, yes, but we're not all military. We do. I'm an organic farmer. We do construction. We do cars, computers, construction, consultant work, all the C-letter type stuff. You think about it, cooking, cleaning, and catering on professional level. We do counseling. We are clerics, a religious body, a spiritual body, and all types of counseling skills are here. And carpet, you get out there with your kicker, we will kick your carpet. We'll install your carpet. Get real shitty, we'll clean your carpet. I mean, come on, we got work, in other words, here in the Black Panther Party that will help everybody. And we need to use the Panther theme, the Panther spirit of the ancestors to save us. The other stuff, the forms were too weak to go up against the opposition. That's why I'm spending time to explain that aspect to you tonight. To use the Panther formula, the 10-point platform, the 9 local objectives, the 5 duties of the Panther, the 12 steps for the Panther. Use those steps. And they're no different. You go down, use the NA. If you need to use this 12 steps from the NA, use it. It's saying the same thing. That's what we're trying to tell you. Ain't no magic in the Bible, the Quran, or the Torah. They're all saying the same thing. You just need to discipline yourself to some common sense, you and your family, and commit to some common sense. That's the first step, and some sensible solutions. That Holy Quran is full of answers. The Bible full of sensible solutions to your problems. The Torah is full. But if you're not use the practical application of the knowledge and the wisdom, I mean, no difference how much Quran you read, how much Bible you read. If you don't take but one verse out of the whole book and use that to save the people, care what you read. Your education don't mean that much if you're not effective in outreach and helping our people. And you're not living in an environment, you surviving. You up in your mansion on Mitchellville Hill, Peel Hill in Chicago somewhere. It don't matter, brothers. The chatter don't matter. Whether you live in Beverly Hills or you got no hills. You know that there's a San Fernando Valley. And I'm telling you that there's peaks and valleys in everything you deal with. It's just very simplicity, the simplicity of life. And the best things in life are right here, brother and sister. At the New Black Panther Party for self-defense. And you position yourself forthrightly, and the best things in life will be delivered directly to your door. Position yourself wrongly in life, and the very best things of life will pass you right on by. So be smart, brother and sister. Work smart. Use the wisdom. Use the knowledge. And that's the healing tools that will save us. It will save you as an individual. It will save you as a family. And it can save you as a nation. Assalamu alaikum and Black Power. We know all the good things that we've said and all that we're able to say. And our good beloved brother, Marvin Gaye, has always said it best. That God is love. God is peace.
He gave us everything. let it control our destiny. We owe it to ourselves to live happy eternally.
Forgive and forget.